And I sat down at the desk, looked her right in the eye, and I said, just call me Bond. Municipal.
I don't know how you do it.
I just come up with it. I just think of it, and I'm like, ah, is that funny? Yes, it is. And then I just say it. You could get that offshore account shaken, not stir. Just like his martinis in the James Bond film.
Yeah. TBTL.
Okay, can I just say I feel like I'm on MTV right now?
You'll be staying with two of our undergrads in their dorm rooms.
And what's a dorm room?
Oh, it's where the students sleep.
Oh, a room share.
Oh, I like that. And you'll maybe eat meals with them in the dining hall.
And that's the cafetorium?
Is the strain beginning to show on him?
If I could sleep 10 days and nights in a rice paddy, I could certainly last in this lousy bank. This is what the animal said to us. He says to Miss Cochran here, baby! Up your butt with a coconut. I think he was prepared to do it. Except I saw no coconut. Yeah, he had no coconut right now.
Hi there, everybody. Welcome to a Monday afternoon edition of TBTL. This right here, this is the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Podcasts are the future of show business.
And I am your host, Luke Burbank.
Hello.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill. In Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, it's kind of alternating between clouds, a little rain, and right when I'm ready to make the proclamation that fall is officially here, the sun peeks out from behind the clouds, and I think maybe we're going to get two more hours of kind of summery weather. I'm not sure. It's crazy, though. It rained over the weekend. We were away, more on that in a moment, and I swear you can already see little green shoots of life coming back. Like, our lawn was so dead, so just like looked like the hair on the crypt keeper in Tales from the Crypt. And now it is, you can just see a little bit of green coming back in, and I feel like we're getting close to the end of summer, but I'm going to try to hang on for at least the rest of this episode 2724 in a collector series. We have so much to talk about on this Monday.
Let the fun begin.
Including a story that we tried to get to on Friday and ran out of time about Domino's Pizza in Russia and a promotion they were offering.
It's cheesy, it's delicious, and kids go nuts for it.
A promotion that I would have taken them up on in a New York minute or maybe a Moscow minute. I would absolutely have taken this deal that they were offering. I will tell you what that was. Also, Carrie and I had a little bit
That's
of a...
That's my wife.
We had an adventure on the high sea over the weekend. That was sort of terrifying, actually.
Oh, my God!
Well, for one of us in the couple. And it did not involve a boat called the Seaductress that we were on. That boat ride went smooth as silk. It involved the Washington State Ferries, and it's even in the news. So we'll talk about that. And then because it is the first Monday after the first real weekend of NFL football...
You got to be a real football nerd to sit through the whole thing.
We are going to do a TBTL no-point conversion, so stick around for that if that is your thing. First, though, we got to say hi to this guy, the longest-running Cobrogan of the show. He is hysterical out there. The people are loving him. He doesn't watch the news because he's a kid, and he lives every month like it's Trucktober. He'd like to tell you one thing before we get started, and that is that the Bone sent him. He's Andrew
Fireball
Walsh, and he joins us now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Hello, my Cobro.
Hello, Luke. Got some weird smells wafting into my window today.
Huh. I'm not responsible for that because I'm about 100 miles away from you.
Oh, I think I know what's going on now here. I'm going to close my drape so that to muffle the sound a little bit because, you know, I told you that, you know, well, you can picture my little studio office in here. I got a window mm-hmm. right to my left, and it overlooks this little alleyway that which we share with the winery downstairs. And also I can kind of overlook the fence into the kind of the back area of the nail salon that is next door to me. This is also the area where we all kind of keep our garbage behind these little gates over
here. And the
here.
Area where you keep your sternly worded notes about what should and shouldn't be going
exactly.
in the garbage.
I've thought about it. I was thinking about that again this weekend. Do I need to put a note on our yard waste saying this is not a place for your takeout Chinese containers? I don't believe that metal p- pins in these containers are compostable. I didn't leave the note. Anyway, what I was smelling a second ago was like that, you know, that smell of like an old recycling bin that's held nothing but beer for 20 years, that like mung kind of smell.
Right.
And I was I thought they smelled bad
on the outside.
And it was like really strong. I'm like, well, it must be coming up from the garbage, which is kind of below me and to my left. And I'm like, that's kind of a gross smell, but whatever. But then I thought, wait a second, no, I'm above a winery. Maybe they have the door open and they're doing some sort of a winery thing down there, like making wine. And it's funny how that completely changed how I felt about the smell. Like, it's the exact same smell, yet in one case I picture it being garbage. I'm like, that's unpleasant. And then I'm like, oh, they're making new wine, fresh wine. That is very pleasant. Same smell.
Mm-hmm.
A beautifully wrapped, glossy, sweet-smelling show.
Perception is everything when it comes to that kind of stuff. Like, old spilled alcohol that's just been kind of, you know, I don't know, baking in the heat of a closed recycling bin. Gross. New alcohol that's being made with loving care that will soon go into your mouth and then make your brain not feel its feelings.
That's wonderful. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Hey, speaking of things that are wonderful, we've actually got a special guest on the show today from all the way down the hall. I don't know how I was able to get this booking. I mean, I know people who know Carrie Burbank.
That's my wife.
She was on this voyage on the Salish Washington State Ferry yesterday with me, and is here to kind of help fill in some of the details, because she has been, since this incident happened yesterday, I don't know, around noon or something, she has been carefully checking the news. And now can bring us some of the details. Welcome to the show, my love.
Thank you.
So let's. Why don't you start by telling me, where were you on the ferry when we had a big like crash or whatever?
Yeah. So we were just pulling into the dock at the Coopville side of the the Port Townsend Coopville run, and. You had gone to the restroom, and I think I was doing something. We were going to meet down at the car, and I was coming down the stairs almost to the car deck, and just as I was walking down the stairs, I felt the boat, like, completely lurch, and I had to grab the handrail, and I looked down at you, and you were in the car, and then I think we both, like, you know,
yeah.
Everyone was kind of looking around like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, I was sitting in the car waiting for you, trying to check the Cleveland Browns score with limited cell coverage. And I felt just like the whole boat almost come to a complete stop very abruptly, and the car kind of almost rolled forward a little bit.
What?
It was kind of weird and intense. And then I just, still sitting in the car, I kind of was looking through the window of the car out, I guess you would call it a porthole on the boat, just kind of a small like opening so I could see the outer world. And where this boat was trying to pull in, I think it's called Keyport, right? No, not Keyport. Keystone.
Yeah.
And it's like a very narrow little kind of bit of water that's in between a couple of beaches. And so you have barely more than the width of the ferry to operate. Sometimes the tide is low, and when the tide is low, the boat actually can't even try to come in and park. But in this particular case, they went for it. And I remember looking out the little opening and just seeing the outer world do a complete 360. Like, the boat did a 360, which it is not designed to do in this tiny little narrow channel, I guess, where they were trying to connect up to the ferry dock.
This space, no joke. I didn't even think it would be possible for that ferry to be sideways. The ferry's like 275 feet long. This little, channeled looks to be like 100 feet across. Obviously it's more than that, but I thought we were like, I was kind of starting to freak out because
I'm wondering how honest you want me to be, because I don't think kind of starting, I mean, I think you were
well
pretty...
at that point.
Oh,
what
I
I'm
see.
Saying is,
okay,
because I grew up with my family camping right there's a campground right there where the ferry dock is, and literally since I was an infant we would camp there every single summer. And when you're camping there, you see the ferry coming in and out all day long, and we walk on the ferry and go over to Port Townsend. And so I'm very familiar with how this goes. And when it started spinning around sideways in that little canal, I was like, something has gone horribly wrong. I thought we were going to probably get stuck.
Also, as it spun around, I think the propeller hit a big pile of rocks.
Yeah, and like, so it actually did make it a complete 360. We start heading out back out to sea
after it crashed into some rocks and the propeller got all bent up.
Right. Well, I don't think we knew that yet. It was when it started to motor back out.
Well, no, I saw that happen. I could see that part of it, believe it or not.
Oh.
And so, or I feel it, I guess, maybe more.
Yeah, I think it was when it started to accelerate again back out to sea. You could feel the boat, something was not right, like the way that it was vibrating and sounding.
Can I actually stop you just for a second? Because you're moving along, you're trucking along, and then basically are you saying the boat does a donut, right? You guys are explaining like what a boat doing like a donut, like a car in a parking lot?
Like a 360, but what happened, the first thing that happened was as we're right about the end where normally the boat kind of softly nestles its way up to the like off ramp, if you will, the dock where you get off the boat and go on to land. Right when that was supposed to be happening, there was a tremendous like, I don't know, collision, crunch.
Yeah.
The boat like did a weird thing where you felt like we were hitting something. And then right after that, the boat started doing a 360. And then during its 360, also, I think, hit some rocks that because it's not really supposed to do a 360. And then started chugging back out to sea. and this was the part where the captain came over the overhead, the whatever, the PA system, and said, message to all crew members, remain calm. We were like, everybody was standing out now by their cars, like, that's the least calming thing that the captain could say.
As soon as he said that to the crew members, I was like, unsaid message, all passengers now start to mildly panic because we had absolutely no idea.
Yeah, he didn't say to the passengers of the Salish Ferry, everybody, it's fine. He said to the crew of the Salish Ferry, everybody keep calm. And I was like, these people have been through training. Like, they should know to keep calm. We're the people just on the boat, the passengers. How about you address our concerns? So we start going back out to sea. Now, I have to be honest with you. I'm not trying to act like I'm immune to getting nervous about things, but at no point did I personally feel in danger. I just thought it was sort of fascinating because I've never had this happen on a ferry. It was clear something had gone horribly wrong. But Carrie Beth, and I'm not trying to put you on any kind of blast here, but like you were really pretty upset by this. Like you were pretty much freaked out.
Yeah, I mean, I was freaked out when it just first started becoming apparent that something is definitely wrong here, and when we were spinning around, because these ferries have kind of gone ashore before in that dock when the tides are really low, but it's never literally spun around like out of control like that.
Brownie, you're spinning around every time you get dizzy.
Exactly, and then when it started motoring back out to sea, that's when I started to get nervous because it may have been illogical, but not having any true sense of what happened or what we're dealing with, I didn't really want to be heading back out to the middle of the ocean. And then on top of that, I think we all assumed it was going to try to head back to Port Townsend, where we came from. It started going the opposite direction, over where there's not even a ferry run. It was going, drifting to the east where and you said this as well, it almost felt like the boat was out of control.
Right.
And that's when I really started to like feel kind of scared.
I thought it was kind of an adventure, and I figured that boat is so huge, it would be really – this is, of course, what they said about the Titanic, which also never sank.
Mm-hmm.
I figured the boat was so huge, it's going to take – like if it had a hole in it, which seemed unlikely to me, there was like it was going to take a while to sink, and then we would just jump in the lifeboats, and then we would go – you know, like I didn't feel in danger at any point, but it was sort of crazy. And then what I realized was, as I was laughing about it, because I thought it was funny, but that was not making you feel better, Carrie Beth.
No, I laughed about it. Not funny. And also, you were telling me it's going to be okay. And historically, in our relationship, almost every time you've ever said it's going to be okay, it was not okay.
This is all, most of this comes from the night of the election of our current president, where I kept thinking Hillary could somehow still get it together votes-wise up until the bitter end. I kept saying it's going to be fine, and it was, of course, not fine. And I lost what last bit of credibility I had with my wife, I lost
that
night.
Because that's happened many times, and I think in your brain, a lot of these times, you're wanting it so much to be fine that you say that, even though there may be contradicting information that's suggesting you know, there might be a reason to worry here.
Well, they managed to get the boat somewhat under control. I don't know. It felt like they tried about 10 times. It's probably more like 4 or 5 times. They tried to land the boat back at the dock, and it was just like they just kept not being able to do it. They'd get close, and then they'd get blown off course, and then...
Well, it was the strangest thing, because we would be heading back into the dock. We'd be, like, almost there, and then all of a sudden, the boat would just start completely spinning sideways again. And so...
This kept happening. He did, so they start to go out to sea. So let me just... I'm sorry, and I think this is on me for not understanding this. This place where it ends up spinning out of control, that was supposed to be your final destination, right? That's where you were supposed to get off of the boat. And
exactly.
How long was this ferry ride from Port Townsend to this place?
It's a 35-minute ferry.
So suddenly it seems like you guys are like, whoa, that was scary. Guess we all get off the boat now. But then for some reason, the boat starts chugging back out to where you came. Like, you could have tasted the shore. But now you're like, I guess we're going all the way back 35 miles to Port Townsend.
Well, we just weren't sure because, it was, again, everything that was happening was sort of unprecedented in our experience. And we used to live in Port Townsend. So we used to take this ferry constantly because it's one of the main ways to get over to kind of the other side of things. So there was just like a... After we almost landed and then crashed and then did a 360 and then limped back out towards the sea, we were all just kind of like, well, let's see how this ends. Then they eventually brought it back around in a huge loop, tried to go back and redock it, kept having trouble. Now my concern was, we're never getting off this boat and I'm going to miss the Seahawk game, which I was really bummed about.
Now you're scared.
Because we had that time... We had time. I know that was when the fear of God really hit me.
And all the people at the campground are out from their motorhomes and tents, and they're all lined up on the beach watching this whole... I mean, it was a
spectacle.
Pretty
and they're
spectacle.
All named Jerry, and they all know
That's
how to drive ferries.
You know what? This is not even a joke. On some level, when something like... I think why I was so serene while this was happening is because it made me feel less bad about crashing our boat. And you think I'm joking, and I'm not joking. It's sort of like... Oh, everybody at every level has problems when trying to operate something in the water. And this, whoever it was at the helm of this ferry boat, which I guess that's slightly redundant, this ferry. I know you like it when I say ferry boat, Andrew.
I like it.
Childlike.
I say sled riding, so you get to say ferry
boat. Whoever was at the helm of this thing obviously has landed this ferry in this little spot hundreds, if not thousands of times. I doubt that they just... all of a sudden lost their ability. Yeah. I think
and it wasn't a low tide, so it wasn't...
I think something on the boat's steering, like, broke.
Well, he did mention when we were... So after we went back out to sea, did this loop, and came back and did about... I think it was, like, 6 or 7 reattempts. At that point, the captain did come on, and he started to say something about a steering malfunction, but then we couldn't hear the rest of it. So I'm almost wondering if, coming in the original time... there was a steering malfunction. That's why he hit something. Then when we did the spin, the rudder got stuck. That's what it said in the newspaper. The rudder got stuck. So then he was dealing with, like, double trouble of having two complications.
Well, amazingly and eventually, he was able to get the boat to the dock, even though that was just, like, super touch and go. But finally, we got connected to the dock. We were able to get off the boat. But Carrie and I were both saying, like, these people, because there's like the kind of thing where it's a busy holiday. It's one of the last holidays of kind of remotely summery weather. All the boats are sold out. Like, it's just all day long. There are no, you can't get on this boat with your car if you don't have a reservation. And we're just like driving off the ferry, looking at this long line of people, this parking lot full of people. And I'm just like, they're already dead and they don't know it. Like, you poor sons of bitches, you don't even know how hosed you are. Because, like, there's no way in God's green earth this boat is getting out of here. And not only is it stuck here, it's now blocking the other boat, because there's two boats that usually make this run and they kind of alternate. And, like, I was like, this is the worst case scenario, because this boat is broken and it is sitting blocking the other boat from coming in here.
Oh, my
God. And we should mention is the Wooden Boat Festival in Port Townsend, which is a very busy time. There's lots of people in Port Townsend. And so then Carrie set about doing some, like, you know, news monitoring, because just to try to figure out what was going on. And it turns out the ferry was broken. The route was shut down all day. They finally towed.
Like, it was closed until further notice.
Which was, when did they tow? They finally towed the boat out of there.
I think in the late afternoon, early evening.
So they finally got it out of there.
Yeah.
And we survived. And what the sad part was, at one point we fell in the water and there was a piece of wood that Carrie was floating on. And I think it was big enough for both of us, Andrew. But she pushed me. I went into the water. And for all she knew, I could have died right then and there. I didn't.
Just get to the part where you guys paint each other naked. I am watching a
Andrew. Okay.
I'm just going to say I'm watching a video. King 5 News has a video of this whole thing happening, and I got to say they speed up the film because it, you know, this happened. I'm sure it felt really disorienting and pretty fast when you were on it, but probably if you were watching it from the shore, it probably seemed like a very slow, lumbering kind of situation because it's a ferry. But the video that King 5 News has posted, which is sped up a little bit, definitely makes the whole thing look harrowing. I'll give you that.
Well, that was only the second half. That was after we'd gone back out to sea, and that was on the reattempt.
Yeah. You're mm-hmm. seeing the point at which someone on shore was like, oh, yeah. This is weird. Let me get my cell phone out. All right, of the real fireworks had already happened.
Sure.
Like the crash, the 360. So, yeah, that's the kind of like, that's the more Benny Hill like kind of version of things.
Yeah.
But, I this also, I think, may speak a little bit to my sense of always looking for hashtag content for our show because, like, I think I'm less afraid of dying in something like that and more excited about, like, God, this would be such a cool story to tell on TBTL. If we actually have to legit get in lifeboats, that would have been, like, I've been on a lot of boats in my life. I've never had to do that. I probably never will. But, like, that would have been an adventure to me. I was almost excited by it. Carrie, you are not excited.
No, thank you. No, I don't know why I was so freaked out, because I definitely was. I was just like all I wanted to do was be off that boat. And the closer we were to shore, I felt better because I thought, I could jump off and swim from here. It would be like 20 feet to the beach. But when we went out farther and we were kind of seemingly out of control, that's when I kind of went into another
gear. There was a dad who's probably about my age comforting his daughter, who was probably like 9. And it was great because he was standing right next to Carrie while he was comforting his daughter. And I was like, he's kind of comforting Carrie, too.
Like, well, he came back there with his daughter.
Overlap comforting was happening, which I thought was good.
It did kind of work because he seemed like he knew what he was talking about.
Why? He looked like John Ryan. He was wearing a Barkley CrossFit shirt. Why would he know more about this than I do?
Because it doesn't take much. But he said,
got one in. That was a solid. That landed.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
But he came back there with his daughter, and he says to her, "We'll come here. We'll come to the back because it's the safest place to be on the boat." And I was like,
"I don't believe that, by the way."
Well, I asked him because I was curious. I was like, "What's the logic behind that?" And he said that if it does hit something again, like when we're moving forward, like because the cars can move, you don't want to be obviously standing amongst the cars.
Yeah, that's actually a good
point. They would
also
lurch forward. And so theoretically,
well, depending on what direction we crashed in,
if you're at the back of the boat from whichever direction you're heading, I think is what he was saying.
I guess so. I don't know. I'm just, it hurts me to know that you trust a John Ryan lookalike more than you trust your own husband.
But yeah, I think it's just, well, I want to ask Andrew, if you
wait
could
a sec. We need to take a break. We're well overdue. So let's do this. We'll take a very quick break, and then when we come back, you can ask Andrew your question. And then we'll
do
much
have
more
to answer it.
That's
Am
you know
I
what,
compelled to legally?
That's a problem to be solved 1.5 minutes from now.
Okay.
Or however long this break takes. We'll figure it out then. Stay with us, it's TBTL. Please direct my call. Like strings and cans through walls. I made some out of lead and I tried them out in bed. All right, we are back, and Carrie, you have a question that you wanted to ask Andrew?
Well, now it makes it sound like it's a really good question worth
original question wasn't worth waiting for, make up a new one. I mean, come on, this is professional broadcasting. This is what we do.
I was just going to ask Andrew if you could, you know, as we were sort of telling that story, and if you imagine yourself being on the boat, you know, Luke clearly has stated that he wasn't at all concerned and, in fact, was hoping for more adventure.
I changed my mind when I saw how scared you were, by the way. I did not want more adventure once I realized you were legit freaking out. Like, then I was like, okay, I hope we get off here soon. If it was just me alone on the boat, I would have been voting for the maximum amount of damage and sea, like seagoing rescue needed. Because I'm that badass.
Yeah, obviously. Andrew, if you put yourself in that situation and kind of imagine those circumstances, what's Andrew Walsh's reaction in this situation?
Andrew Walsh would like to exercise his constitutional right to not answer that question. No, I was going to mention this. In this particular situation, I can really relate to Luke because I don't have, I think, based on everything that you've told me, while I have an irrational fear of flying that is getting worse, I probably have a somewhat irrational non-fear of boating-related things, and I don't know why. I know that, obviously, if you're out at sea in a huge boat like that sinks, you can't just swim away. It creates a suction, and it pulls everything down with it. And there's a million reasons why it's not so easy as just jumping into a lifeboat. But in this particular situation, I think I would just be like, what is going on? This is crazy. And I think I would probably have the same. I mean, I would be irritated about missing the game, or if it was a different night, I would be irritated about like, well, I just want to get home. All I wanted after this trip away was to get home and watch TV. I'd probably be irritated at a certain point, but I would think I'd be exhilarated, and I don't think that, and I'm afraid of a lot of things, but just for some reason, this particular one, I don't think would get to me.
Okay, cool. So you guys are fear shaming me.
No, we're just being honest about what a giant wuss you were being. Yeah. Sorry.
I think I said this when we were driving home as to, I don't really know why I was kind of so scared other than feeling like you are yourself just personally not in control of a situation, and then you're riding on a thing that feels like it's out of control, mm-hmm. like it's sort of two layers of there's nothing you can do about this. And I also had a kind of a scary fairy experience when I was in like the third grade.
Oh, right. So this is actually, I'm sure, part of the story is that you guys were on a ferry that went just like, it was in really rough weather, right? Like almost like felt like it was going to sink.
Tip over, yeah, and then it did hit a rock when we landed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I also just think I have this weird innate, you know, my dad collects antique cars, and so I'd ride in these cars when I was a kid, and sometimes they would break down, and one time there was this in particularly loud malfunction of, I think, the transmission went out on this car, and...
What kind of car was it?
Oh, it was, I think, a 1948 Buick Roadmaster, and... the transmission, I think, is positioned very close to the back seat. So when it went out, it basically was just like grinding. And I just popped the door open and jumped out of the car. I was like, I'm getting out. And like my mom
and you
dad,
were how old?
I was like 7, probably.
What?
And
how
like,
fast
it's okay.
Were you
it's nothing. I mean, he was slowing down because it was, you know, losing power, obviously, or momentum. But they were trying to assure me that it would, you know, it wasn't going to like explode or something. And I just was like, nope.
Well, and also when you were a kid, weren't you at a sleepover and your friend's dad decided to play a joke on you guys where he like came and knocked on the window and you were just like out of the room before anybody could even figure out what was going on?
Because we didn't know it was his dad. We just saw like this.
Oh,
sort of
my God.
Her dad.
And I hurtled over the sectional couch down the hall and opened their bedroom room and was like, Shane, that's her dad's name. As I simultaneously see their sliding glass door open and him not in the bed, like, and then I realized.
So your move when you're scared like that is just to be like, I'm out, and you could not, I'm out off of this boat, so it was freaking you out.
I think so, yeah.
Oh, my God, I got so many things I want to talk to you about. Okay, first of all, I want to ask you about flying, but before we get to that, what was this guy thinking? He was, so you guys were how old and his daughter's having a sleepover party and he decides to creep you all out? This is
a bad idea. That's not actually what it was. I think we were in like the 6th or 7th grade and we were just out watching movies and, you know, in the living room. And he went out to get some air and he was just like wondering what we were up to. Like if we were, you know, I don't know, doing anything sneaky or whatever. And then that's when we like, I think somebody was like, it might have been me, somebody was like, there's an arm, and like we saw an arm like in the window or something.
Oh, so now he wasn't trying to scare you, he was just spying on you. Either way, I'm just so uncomfortable with this story.
He was trying to reset the teddy cam that he set up.
Right. No. Oh man,
it was glitching.
So there's that, but let's go back to the fear aspect of this, because I was going to say, Carrie, that like I almost guarantee you that I have been in situations on airplanes where there's just probably even a standard amount of turbulence, and I am gripping my armrests like white knuckled. And even though I know, like, so many people have written into the show who work in the aerospace or aeronautics industry and can tell me, like, that what you're feeling is just wind doing this. It's not that big of a deal. The planes are built to handle it. Like, that's all part of the thing. It's like waves on an ocean, only it's in the sky. For me, there is no rationalizing my fear. I just can't get the picture of my own death out of my brain when a little bit of turbulence comes. How are you in airplane situations? Do you have a little bit of that, or are you just, like, kind of the opposite of me?
I mean, I think it's, like, pretty adventurous and cool when it's happening. I get a little bit of, you know, my antenna go up, and I'm much more uncomfortable when that starts happening. But fortunately, I haven't ever been in too bad of a turbulent situation, so I don't fully know kind of the extent of that. But I'm able to remain pretty calm in those situations. Typically, but again, I have never been anything super bad.
I don't know if this really means anything or if this actually indicates anything. But what I do, if there's turbulence to the point where I'm starting to get kind of nervous, I try to look for a flight attendant, and I try to look at their face. And if their face looks serene, then I realize this is fine, this is normal. If they look nervous, that's when I start to feel nervous. Now, they're probably trained to try to look pretty calm.
What if the captain comes on and says, flight attendants, remain calm?
Well, that was one of the things on the boat, not to go back because I think we've sufficiently covered that story, but one of the things that I did know, the way I knew something was really up was a couple cars in front of us was a guy who obviously worked for the ferry system. He was like in a ferry system uniform, but he must have gotten off his shift or something because he had his daughter with him, and they were getting into their car. And then when this thing happened, he jumped out of his car and like went running off somewhere. And I was like, oh, okay. The guy that works on this boat knows something is up. And so, if I'm in the air and I'm starting to feel nervous, which is I'm pretty at this point. I went through a period of being really freaked out about flying, like in my 20s, and actually got anti-anxiety medicine for it and stuff. And for whatever reason, I just have kind of cycled out of that feeling. But for me, it's like if I'm feeling really stressed on a flight, scared, I just try to look for the flight attendant. And usually they're just reading their Danielle Steele novel while they're, you know, if it's that part of the flight where they're sitting down ready to land, which is usually seems like when the turbulence kicks up a lot. If they look fine, then I assume that they're not freaking out for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Or they're not scared enough.
Yeah.
And that's why they
got
into
it. If you're not scared, you're not paying attention. Anyway.
Just real adrenaline junkies.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say about this harrowing voyage? Do I get some points, Carrie Beth, for saying everything was going to be okay because in this case everything was okay? Do I win back any of the credibility that I've lost over the course of our relationship?
I guess it's only fair.
I'm dying to get more information. As you get more information on what actually happened, let me know. Okay, Carrie?
Will do. Apparently, there's a whole investigation happening. Wow.
I bet you Dory's not talking about this and the inefficiency of government.
I'm flattered
boats.
That this actually made its way into the Seattle news because I was like, first I thought, well, this will just be a ferry's out of commission and maybe we'll be in the Port Townsend Leader because that's a newspaper, you know, based in Port Townsend, and this is a big story if you live over there. But I was like, this is not going to rise to the level of being on in the Seattle media or being covered. And then when it did, it made me feel like I was really part of something. Part of some real drama on the high seas.
No quotes from you in this article, though, which to me, that's lacking.
I submitted a long dossier
mm-hmm.
of comments on the matter, and then they decided to skip that. So, all right, Carrie Beth, thanks for coming on. Thanks for
guys.
Your research on this matter, and thank you for believing me a little bit more next time I tell you everything's going to be okay.
Okay, bye, Andrew.
Bye. I'm glad you're alive.
She said thanks, but I was turning her microphone down because, frankly, I'd had enough of her program.
No,
yeah. Let's do this real quick. While we've got it on our minds, and that is gratefulness, gratitude for being alive, for surviving the drama on the Salish Washington State Ferry, and for being able to work on TBTL. And it's only happening because of our donors of the day. These are people who supported TBTL during the last TBTL-a-thon. Those donations, some of which are recurring, some of which are still happening month after month, those make the show possible. Today we want to thank Sarah Hogan of Denver, Colorado, Amy Rubel of Tacoma, Washington, Jolene Tashner of Portland, Oregon, Joseph McIntyre of Atlanta, Georgia, and Linda Hill of Bothell, Washington. Linda, Joseph, Jolene, Amy, and Sarah. Thank you for being generous. Thank you for supporting TBTL. You're welcome for me not making obvious references to some of your names, which I know you're sick of. Looking at you, Joseph McIntyre. Would you get that reference?
Would you get
a Joseph McIntyre reference? What would be the most overused Joseph McIntyre? Like when you meet him and he introduces himself as Joseph McIntyre and you say, like, what would be the most common thing somebody would be saying, like?
Ooh, I don't know. I thought you were going to, maybe you would slip into one of your Scottish brogues or something when you were saying it. I'm glad you didn't.
I reserve
do that.
Those for Connor McCulloch.
Right. Thank you. Well, I'm glad we were able to avoid that altogether.
Yeah,
I assume it's not a tire related joke because that would be tired. What is the reference you're thinking of?
Joey McIntyre was a member of New Kids on the Block.
Oh, Joseph,
I think arguably
slash Joey McIntyre.
Joey McIntyre. I think arguably the hottest new kid. And still to this day, I think the hottest new kid.
And you have a Hogan. That could have been a Hulk Hogan situation.
Or Rubel, a Hogan's Heroes.
A Hogan's Heroes. Ruble, obviously, Russian currency.
Sure.
Linda Hill. Are you kidding me? That's a land mass. A hill.
Sure.
Or a land formation.
Her animated show, Queen of the Hill.
Right.
Which I actually found oddly watchable. See,
you have a whole song about Jolene, but we didn't make any of those references.
And that's, I think, the kind of broadcast excellence that these folks turn to TBTL for and, in fact, support TBTL with their hard-earned dollars because of. Because we don't make silly jokes like that. The most obvious joke you could make about – maybe that's – by the way, maybe that's the new game. Everyone's name for the rest of the year, which is like, I don't know, 1,000 more people.
Mm-hmm.
What's the most obvious joke you can make about this person's name?
Okay.
And then next year we'll have no donors, and then we don't have to do the show anymore because we won't be able to do it for our jobs.
What's the chance that we have somebody whose last name is Butts? I want that one.
I heard from a listener of the last name Butts today asking me if we were going to be doing Wait, Wait, if I was going to be on Wait, Wait when it came to... I think Orlando, and I'm sad to report I am not on that show. I sure wish I was. Let's see. Listener Laura said, I'm so excited. Wait, Wait is coming to Orlando. Please tell me you're on the panel. My mom and I would love to see you do your stuff. Laura, I would love to let your mom and you see me do my stuff. But after the monster truck situation in Tampa, I am no longer allowed in the Sunshine State. And also, I think Wait, Wait found some better people than me to put on the panel for that week. So I am sorry to disappoint.
I do have an important thing I want to say, though, actually. This is something that I've been meaning to say the past couple of shows. This is not a hack joke from yours truly. This is an earnestness. I've been getting a lot of emails from folks who are saying, hey, where are my special thank you gifts after I donated to the TBTL-a-thon? And most people, I think most of the gifts have shipped, but there are some folks who are still waiting on hats, mugs, T-shirts, and you're getting concerned. You're thinking, I'm seeing other people get their stuff online. Does that mean that you have skipped me over? And that is not the case. Unfortunately, there was like a confluence of events at American Public Media, from kind of personnel changes to changes in the actual factory where apparently these things are either made or distributed, or the distribution center, they're making changes. So unfortunately, some of these are late in coming to you. We sincerely apologize. I was talking to Emily at 8 p.m. She sincerely apologizes. But fear not. If you haven't gotten your stuff yet, it could be maybe another few weeks or so. We're working on it. We're getting them your way, and you have not been overlooked, I promise. So sorry,
I don't
that.
Apologize because this is still better than when I was in charge of the thank yous.
Right.
I apologize for nothing.
You did a good job of lowering that bar, and I think Emily really.
I apologize to the people who still haven't gotten their
poster.
Venn diagram poster
yeah.
from the late 1980s when I was supposed to be sending those out. All right. For serious, though, Sarah, Amy, Jolene, Joseph, and Linda, thank you for supporting TBTL. Thank you for making the show possible. Thanks for making episode 2724 and a collector series happen. Some Heidecker. Heidecker on the bass. Mm-hmm. You know what that actually makes me think of? And let me just so as to establish this as... I don't know, a regular show. Let me play the top story sounder.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
And then let me just say, this is not on the list, and I actually, I don't know exactly what my plan is to say about this, but I want to just say that Andrew, you and I were both really bummed out on Friday to hear about Mac Miller passing away.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I thought about it in that moment because of that bass solo. On Friday, thinking about Mac Miller and looking up various things about him online, I happened across the NPR Tiny Desk series that he performed at for his latest album, Swimming, which I have been personally obsessed with for the last couple of months. So that's probably part of why this really, 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 really bummed me out, because I've just been listening to this guy every single day and kind of feeling like, you know, I never met Mac Miller, but I just felt kind of a connection to him through his music. But that Tiny Desk show is pretty incredible. And one of the songs called What's the Use has just like a great bass line, which is played by this guy, Thundercat, who is like, oh, yeah. We had Thundercat on Livewire. He's like, he escaped from Parliament Funkadelic like 25 years ago and then apparently was cryogenically frozen and then unfrozen now. Like, he is just like a cool, weird funk guy who just like plays the bass like nobody's business. Anyway, thinking about that bass line on Bossa Nova Hold Music had me thinking about Thundercat, had me thinking about that Mac Miller performance, and then had me thinking about Mac Miller and just like what an obvious tragedy that was. I was trying to think about why I, as like a 42-year-old guy who knows nothing about hip-hop anymore, why I was so devastated by this guy passing away. And I think it's because this latest album, Swimming, there are so many lines in it. I know you said you're not really a big lyrics person, Andrew, but there are so many lines in that album that just resonated with me so hard. And like, he's 26 years old. But he was and he was actually famous and rich, and I'm not famous and not rich. But just sort of stuff about being a performer for your job and kind of also doing things that you think are going to make you feel better and they don't really make you feel better. I mean, these are not like original thoughts, but he had a way of sort of putting them that just really spoke to me. So if anybody is curious about Mac Miller, I would recommend checking out that album, Swimming. And also I'd recommend checking out that Tiny Desk concert, because it was pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, I knew a couple of songs by him. I was a fan of that first single that he came out with, the Bum Bum Bum. I played it for you recently. I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. But anyway, I remember watching that video, and it's like this very low-produced video. This was probably came out in 2009. Kid was 26 this year until he died. So like, he was so young then. And I remember having a weird fascination with him because I liked this. This first song that kind of came out, I really liked it, but he also just has this like weird kind of he's got swagger. He's a hip-hop musician. Of course he has swagger. But I remember feeling very conflicted about him. Like, he almost put out this outward appearance of a guy that I wouldn't have liked or would have been very intimidated by in high school or real life or something. But he also just had this underlying charm that oozed through it a little bit. It was just like he was smarmy, but like knowingly smarmy. And I could be totally wrong about this. These were just kind of things that I interpreted maybe incorrectly.
Can I play you a little bit of something?
Yeah.
Just Mac, to that sort of, to the topic of like what kind of a person was Mac Miller, of course, none of us know, because I don't know him. But this is a little excerpt, or I didn't know him. This is an excerpt of him talking to Larry King. Larry King still has, you know, a variety of weird TV shows he's doing. He does one on a website called Aura.tv. And then I think he was doing something for RT, the RT network, which is basically Russian propaganda, which is so strange. And like, I've made so much fun of Larry King on this show, but maybe just because I'm becoming more dotty or something. I kind of love Larry King now, like not ironically. Like, this is just a little excerpt of him talking to Mac Miller. I watched this back when I got into this album, Swimming. I was just Googling around on Mac Miller. And I thought, if I remember this right, and I haven't watched it since then, I feel like Larry King and Mac Miller both come off as pretty likable. This is from back in 2015.
Play a little game of If You Only Knew. By the way, Good AM will come out September 18th.
I'll ask you. Did you pre-order the album yet?
We have. We the office ordered it.
Oh yeah, we got it.
Yeah. Hey, we don't let you down.
Just making sure, man.
Jesus. You want to come back on the Willie Wilson show?
I'm trying to.
All right. All right.
It could be the musical sidekick.
I'm going to throw some questions at
you. I'll just mention, because you're just hearing the audio, they're not having an actually tense conversation. They're both laughing.
Sound it. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, no, good. I don't, because minus the visual, I want to make sure this is not a testy interview. It's like Larry King being delighted by this weird kid he doesn't understand, and Mac Miller being delighted that Larry King doesn't understand him. Mm-hmm. Like, it's actually a very cute exchange, I think.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm going to catch him.
And you throw it back.
I'll throw him right back.
First girl you ever kissed.
A girl named Cassidy.
And was in Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
How old were you?
8. I'm talking tongue and everything.
Yeah, tongue too. You find out, whatever happened to Cassidy?
I don't know.
Best piece of advice you ever got?
Loop, swoop, and pull. Tie your shoes.
Loop, swoop, oh, how to tie your shoes. That's important advice in life. Yeah. I still haven't learned it. Favorite part about living in L.A.?
I just moved to New York, I'm bi-coastal now. I say that any chance I get because it makes me sound successful. favorite part of living in L.A. is the space.
You live in Brooklyn?
Yes.
Where? Where in Brooklyn?
In Dumbo. Dumbo, down under the Manhattan Bridge overpass.
Oh, that's called Dumbo?
Dumbo. It's right by Vinegar Hill.
When I lived there, it was down by the... It was Brooklyn Heights.
Yeah, it's right by... Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I lived in Bensonhurst.
Oh, okay.
The real Brooklyn.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. any other politician you're going to name a song after?
Oh, he had done a song called Donald Trump before Trump was president of the U.S.
I don't know yet. Someone's got a spark. But I didn't name... When I named that song, it wasn't after a politician.
I know he was a real estate guy.
Right.
Most underrated rapper?
Larry King.
A song we'd be most surprised to hear on your iPod.
Not going to touch it, huh?
Jeez, really getting the burning questions here.
Do you have a song on your iPod?
It's not all me. Kids Bop.
Okay, that amuses me. I have no idea who he's talking about. If not music, what would you be doing?
I'd be a teacher.
Biggest splurge?
Like, we spent the most money. I spent $170,000 on a car. Stupid.
What kind of car?
G-Wagon. It's nice, but it's... Well, I should have leased.
You leased it?
I should have leased it.
Favorite thing to do on a day off?
Take a nice walk and contemplate the deeper things in life.
You have a girlfriend?
Yes.
Most embarrassing moment on stage?
Let's see. I've puked inside my mouth and swallowed it. That was
what?
Like, I threw up.
On stage?
Well, just in my mouth and then swallowed it.
The audience know?
Mm-mm. Oh, my pants fell down one time.
you forgot about that? Where do you see yourself in 10 years, Mac?
Hopefully, you know, doing a lot of different things in entertainment. Maybe I have a kid.
You're going to be bigger than you are now. Much bigger.
That's what I hope.
I predict it for you.
This interview is adorable to me because, A, Larry King cannot hear for shit. Like, of the 10 questions that are asked of Mac Miller, his response, 9 times Larry King goes, what?
Dumbo. Like,
or
Dumbro.
Mishears what the... Dumbro? Dumbro? Anyway, Mac Miller seemed like a... Based on listening to his music and watching some interviews with him, he seemed – and also I would say the response online from people from his – you could say his colleagues, you know, folks like Chance the Rapper and J. Cole and, you know, people that had worked with him. It just was universally – he was universally beloved by these people, and it didn't seem like it was fake. It didn't seem like it was – like perfunctory, like, oh, this guy died and now we all have to get together, the other famous hip hop people, and say we feel bad. People, I think, loved this guy, and it's a real sad day, and I'm sorry that we found out about it right after the show, because we would have definitely talked about it and played some Mac Miller on Friday's show, because we got some emails kind of right away, like after the show was over. And so anyway, by way of explaining why we didn't get to it on Friday, it was just a timing issue. But I guess you just say rest in peace. This guy was a really interesting young person, and I'm pretty sad he's not going to be on planet Earth.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
All right, now on to the important matter of how you could get free Domino's pizza in Russia, because I think that's really what people tuned in today for. The Domino's Pizza Russia contingent, I don't know if it's like – let's not make this about franchising agreements, okay? But I don't really – when they say Domino's Pizza Russia, is that like its own entity? In other words – Domino's Pizza is some company in America, presumably, and if you want to have a Domino's Pizza, I think you can, like, buy one, the rights to have one in your town, and then you have to, like, you know, find where the place is going to be and do all the stuff and make the pizza, et cetera. So I don't know if Domino's Pizza Russia is its own thing. I'm thinking of this because there was also some weird story during the Olympics where it was, like, Domino's Pizza Russia. I forget what they asked people to do, but it was something kind of not cool. It was, like, I can't remember specifically, but it was, like, it was something that they had to kind of walk back. I don't know if it was sexist or something else, but they seem to be – Domino's Pizza Russia really seems to be pushing the envelope with these promotions, I guess is my point.
Can I jump in really quickly? I know you said you don't want to talk about it, but you raised the question, so I feel like I should answer it. According to an article that was just written last month, the headline from Quartz magazine is, "The unluckiest Domino's Pizza operator runs franchises in both Turkey and Russia." And so it looks like there is a company called DP Eurasia, and that runs the Domino's Pizza chains in Turkey, Russia, Azerbaijan – I always say that wrong – and Georgia.
Does it say, though, what the – like why that makes them the most unlucky?
The U.S. stepped up economic sanctions against Turkey and Russia last week, putting a big dent in the value of both the Russian ruble and the Turkish lira. So that's bad for business.
The Amy Ruble of Tacoma,
Washington. I meant about Azerbaijan. I thought I was going to nail that. Anyway, so that's it's bad for business, but especially bad if you run the pizza chains in both of those countries, according to this article.
I think what – oh, gosh. Now I want to figure out – I think that the Domino's Pizza Russia said they would give free pizza to life to anyone – who got pregnant in the Olympic Village or something crazy.
Really? Like, oh, I don't remember that.
It was something weird with the Olympics and them making some crazy offer that, again, I think they had to sort of walk back. Anyway, the current situation for them is that they offered free pizza for life if someone got a Domino's Pizza tattoo. And this actually would amount to you could get 10,000 free pizzas potentially. You would get 100 pizzas, up to 100 pizzas a year for 100 years. So if you lived that long, like if you tattooed a baby and the baby lived 100 more years and could somehow eat 100 pizzas a year, that baby would be really making out like a bandit. So the deal was you get a tattoo of a domino, of Domino's, and then you submit the picture, I think, via social media, and then they were going to give you free pizza for life. But like within a matter of like hours – they were getting flooded with pictures. People just running out and getting the tattoo. Who knows? People maybe already had the tattoo. So then they had to like clarify the size the tattoo needed to be and that needed to be on your visible body. And then they had to put out a picture of what the visible body is like for their purposes. Then they they had to lock it down. They said we're only going to take 350. And then they had 350 people had already sent stuff in like within no time. So then they had to basically say, no, please, nobody else get a tattoo of a domino. But apparently, according to this one article in the BBC, even people who – anyone who got the tattoo on the day that they announced this, by midnight, they were still giving some consideration to. I find this amazingly bad plan. I mean, I guess they're getting free PR out of it. But like – I mean, this is a no-brainer, right? Would you consider, Andrew, getting a Domino's tattoo to get free pizza? Like, you know, 100 pizzas a year for however many – the rest of the time on this planet? Would you consider doing that?
No. In fact, that's why we're doing this story because, I mean, if you'll recall, I sent this to you on a day when I felt like we didn't have a lot of top stories. So I was like, we could do this if we need something. Although these kind of obvious publicity stunts, you know, I always feel a little bit cringy just totally falling into their media traps. And you said, well, actually, I have a lot to say because I would totally do this in a second. So if I was so uncomfortable as to even maybe raise this as a possible topic on TBTL, clearly there's something in me that would also not want to get a major international company's logo tattooed on my body. Now, the cool thing is people were being clever about it. It wasn't just their logo. It was like they were interpreting a domino tattoo in all kinds of creative ways. And I did kind of like that. So you kind of find a loophole. And like a domino is kind of a cool looking thing. So,
yeah, somebody had a tattoo of like a sort of a chain attached to the domino, and they were like chained to the dominoes or whatever. Like they were making fun of the fact that they were now – they basically – you didn't have to – it didn't have to be a respectful tattoo. It just had to fit like certain specifications in terms of the size and again, where it was on your body. I would have done this in a second. Number one, a domino is not a bad tattoo.
Mm-mm.
Like, it's kind of bitchin', and it didn't have to be the Domino's Pizza colors. So, like a domino, it's not like they wanted you to get a tattoo of the Noid to return to that
See?
Topic.
Now I
See,
might
now,
actually get
now you're
a
listening,
Noid,
right?
Which is weird because that's even more like specifically branded, but it's also old and it's from my childhood.
Like it isn't like you have to get a tattoo of Papa John Schnatter of the Papa Murphy's chain. Like a domino is a thing that people you might get tattooed on your body anyway, and it didn't have to be the colors of Domino's Pizza. So like that was part of it for me. Like they're not asking me to get something. I mean, I got some dingus tattoos as it is. I got a red star on my arm. I've got playing cards. I'm literally doing an accounting. This is how many tattoos I have. I have to look at them to remember what ones are. I got a horseshoe with my daughter's name on it. Like
you have
a domino
a whole bunch
would
of
not
notes
be that
to yourself
out of
– of things not to forget when you wake up with a blank brain again.
Exactly.
I've seen that one.
Don't get on the Salish ferry.
right.
So first of all, I wouldn't be that crazy for me to have – I have a Joy bottle tattooed on my arm. It wouldn't be that crazy if I had a domino. So that's one thing. I like Domino's pizza, by the way. Sorry, pizza connoisseurs out there. A thin crust Domino's pizza on a hotel room bed by myself with Forensic Files, that's heaven. I'm down with that. Except for the fact that they don't usually have napkins in hotel rooms, so you end up using a towel from the shower, which does feel kind of – like you're not living your best life. But anyway, I like Domino's pizza. This is a lot of pizza. A lot of times this like free something for life. When a company offers you free whatever for life, it's not unlimited. It's not Mr. Unlimited. Mm-hmm. There's always like a cap. It's always like, oh, actually once a month you can get this for however many years. I'm sorry, 100 pizzas a year, that's a lot of pizza.
Yeah, it is.
That's like 2 pizzas a week gratis for like a tattoo that could be $100. Like, you know, I don't know how much tattoos cost in Russia, but like I would have this again. It's hard to quantify what the value of the PR is. And I guess maybe nationally the Domino's, like as a company or all of the franchisees, they share in a certain amount of awareness that they wouldn't have had that's worth this. But like, honestly, this feels like a sweet deal to me. I'm not surprised that people ran out and got a Domino's tattoo on their forearm. I think it just had to be below the elbow or something. I don't have the model in front. They had like a figure of a human and they had like little arrows pointing to where it had to be. But like, I don't know. I just feel like I would – if Domino's US rolls this out, will someone let me know? Because I will absolutely do this. No question about it.
Do you think you would get sick of Domino's pizza after a while? Because it is like, no. I don't diss Domino's Pizza either. Sometimes I like a kind of one of the chain, kind of more of a cheapo kind of style pizza. I just referred to this, one of my happiest sports memories, even though I can't remember the game. I believe it was a Huskies game, might have been the Apple Cup, when you created something Mountain. Called Pizza Mountain back in like 2011 or something, and we all came over, and you just ordered way too much pizza. And there's something that I like about just having too much pizza, like knowing that even if everybody ate as much as they could until their bellies stood out like a cartoon, there would still be pizza left over. That just appeals to me because I'm what they call a glutton. And that was great. I mean, that pizza is exactly what I wanted on game day. But every, like you said, this could get you through maybe like two pizzas a week for the rest of your life. I think if you ate that much of that brand and that style of pizza, I think it would wear on me a little bit, I think.
Sure, but I if I got this, and by the way, this was real. They gave people certificates. There are pictures of the certificates online. You can walk – if you have one of these certificates, apparently you can walk into a Domino's Pizza in Russia, hand it to them, and then they are allowed to ask you to show them the tattoo, although they may not. Mm. Who knows? But if they're suspicious, they might say, show me the tattoo. Sure. My fair. Thought is I probably wouldn't have two Domino's Pizzas a week. Frankly, I don't eat that much pizza. I don't eat as much pizza as I would like to. I love pizza. I would eat pizza all the time. But let's just say you got a couple of them a month. I mean, for a $100 tattoo, imagine it's $20 per pizza maybe. I don't know what that stuff costs in Russia, but let's just say it's $15 for a large pizza. I mean, once you have 10 pizzas, you've now paid for the tattoo. Any pizza you get after that is just free pizza.
I assume that you can only get one pizza at a time, like that you can't be like, I'm throwing a pizza party for work. I need, 10 free pizzas right now, right? Because otherwise.
Yeah, I assume the same thing, because, yeah, I bet you there are lots of rules. But there were people, again, I saw pictures online of people eating their pizza that they got from – sending Domino's in Russia a picture of their tattoo and then getting the certificate and then going in. So there is some mechanism by which you can get at least a pizza. It looked like a large pizza too. Like, I don't know. Again, I think that seems like – now here's the funny part. If it was Papa John's, I would not do it. Partially because I just am not really a fan of the – I haven't had everything Papa John's has to offer. But of the like – what would you call them? Of the kind of mass – of the mass distributed – massively available. I would say the order of sort of largest national pizza chains, to me, the order of deliciousness starts with Pizza Hut. Mm-hmm. Nobody pizzas the Hut.
Thank God you said that.
But I like Pizza Hut. I like eating in an old-ass Pizza Hut with a red roof, which are increasingly hard to find. Mm-hmm. You go into that Pizza Hut, you get that like red plastic cup with the mm-hmm. pebble ice, you get some soda in there. You sit down, you get a Pizza Hut pizza. I had that in Kendallville, Indiana, when I was road tripping back from Buffalo a few years ago. It was so good. Like, there's nothing like having Pizza Hut in one of those old weird Pizza Huts.
Yeah, I miss that. That's a very – and then when I was just getting old enough to start hanging out with just me and my friends, there was a Pizza Hut very near my house, practically across the street, where they had a jukebox and they had one tabletop video game in the corner, and we would go there for lunch and stuff, and it was kind of our hangout for a while. Very, very fond memories. So you got Pizza Hut, you got Domino's, you got Little Caesars. I'm not listing mine. I'm just kind of reminding you of something.
Little
Caesars.
No, yeah, please keep reminding me. You know what? I'm going to put Little Caesars. I haven't had Little Caesars since I was a kid.
Me too. But the commercials, every time I see them, I want one.
And there's one down the street from my house, and I don't know why I don't go there more. Again, it's mostly out of pizza self-denial, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'd put Little Caesars up there, though. I'd go Pizza Hut. I'd go Domino's. Although what I really like about Domino's, and this I don't think the tattoo applied to this, I like their weird – bizarre chicken side products. Like I like a buffalo chicken kicker.
Okay.
That's delicious to me. It's just basically their kind of McNugget. But I just like because you can dip it in buffalo sauce and then you dip it in the ranch dressing and then you have what I call a lost Saturday because you're never leaving the couch.
Right. Those are the main ones. Papa John's is on this list I'm looking at now. I'm looking at Mental Floss. Then they go to Papa Murphy's, and already I'm like, wow, number five.
Papa
here.
Murphy's is so much better than Papa John's. It's not even close.
And it's such a, but to me, it's a very different experience. I wouldn't include it on the list. And then,
yeah,
then
you
they
have
go,
to cook a Papa Murphy's. It should be in its own category.
It's just, that's just different. And then California Pizza Kitchen, which I've literally never been to before, and I
also
don't think of that as a delivery.
This list
place.
This list is
it's
BS.
Bullshit.
You're
thank
reading,
you.
No offense.
No, thank but, you. I agree. Because then Marco's Round Table, Mellow Mushroom. What are these?
Oh, Round Table.
Really? I don't know Round Table.
Oh my gosh. See, I don't think of Round Table as being a I guess it's a national brand. I should know because I was one of my more embarrassing audition processes for doing something in showbiz was auditioning to be the voice of all the Round Table pizza TV commercials where I just I was in New York in a studio and all the Round Table pizza executives had been ushered into a studio in Los Angeles. We're on a video link. They had someone they wanted to use, and the people at the ad agency were like, no, this Luke Burbank guy, he's like a modern day Will Ferrell. Mm. And then I just proceeded to completely and totally not wow them. So I guess Round Table is obviously a national chain. I love Round Table pizza. I think I'm just going to go Pizza the Hut, Round Table, Domino's. And then, like, honestly, Papa John's is at the bottom of the list of nationally available pizza to me for so many reasons. The taste of the pizza and also the taste of seeing Papa John drunk at a Louisville game.
Yeah.
Just looking like the world's biggest something or other.
I would not get a Godfather's pizza tattoo, but I would get one that says 999.
God, is Godfather still around?
I don't know. I only know of it because of Herman Cain. And that was the election cycle that you and I were both working together at Cairo Radio. So we did like, I think I did a whole Herman Cain mashup for the show. And
how many stories did I tell you about like Godfather's pizza in Seattle? That was totally my, let's put on some music from The Godfather while we do this. Don't you think The Godfather is slightly overrated as a movie?
Yeah, I do now. I mean, growing up, I mean, you can't just throw this into a pizza conversation because, I mean, obviously, I'm going to get so many ats
you come
on this.
Here right. On the day of our pizza conversation.
It's hard for me to separate.
To talk about the movie The Godfather.
I think
that's one of the worst Marlon Brando impressions that's ever happened. Hold on.
That is your Scottish brogue.
You come here on the day of... I'm trying to do him as an Australian and to really...
Let's power out of that. Let me just say what I want to say on this. It's like, for me, the experience of The Godfather and the mystique around The Godfather, like for me, I knew it was my dad's, one of his favorite movies, and he would tell us about it all the time. But we grew up in a very strict household where we were not allowed to see R-rated movies. So it was this weird dynamic where we weren't allowed to watch this movie, but my dad loved it so much and he would talk about it. So by the time I was old enough to watch the movie, which I think was in eighth or ninth grade, and I met some friends in eighth grade at this new school I was going to, and they were obsessed with The Godfather. And so then I finally watched it in eighth grade, and it was like, in a certain way, my dad had almost ruined all of the good scenes, like the finding the gun in the commode scene, or you know, hiding it there and all that stuff. Like, I knew a bunch of these scenes that were going to happen, but like for me, it's like it's really hard to take away that context and the specialness of that movie. And I think as a culture, that's the thing too. But I remember, I think it was Ally McKay on the Kevin and Bean show, like. I think this was like content for like an entire month of June where she said, yeah, those movies are overrated. And then just spent the rest of the month responding to the people who said she doesn't know anything about film. So I don't know. I think there's some really good things about The Godfather. I think watching it today, I mean, it's definitely a product of its time, and movies have, you know, movie making has moved on too, you know?
Yeah, I think it's in one way, it's a victim of its own success in that I think it probably was. It was groundbreaking filmmaking at the time, and I think that probably Coppola did a really good job with it. But then because of its popularity, it spawned many more things and things in the genre. And then you look at something to me like The Sopranos, which is like just a vastly superior product, but that's because they had The Godfather to lean on, and they had the, you know, Goodfellas and, you know, like 50 million other things that came after The Godfather or those movies. So it's kind of not fair. It's like It's like a band that started a sound, and then you look at the evolution of that sound, and then some band that's doing it better 20 years later. It's like, yeah, but they wouldn't be there if not for the first band to make that sound. So I want to credit them on that. But that being said, it's just it's held up as just like this magical film that is just better than anything else that's ever been made. And part of it was I never watched it till I was in my 20s, and I watched it at around the same time I was watching the Sopranos.
That was a
real mistake. Yeah. Side by side, I got the order real messed up on that one. Because like, what happened was I was watching The Sopranos on Netflix in the days when you would literally get the DVDs mailed to you.
Oh yeah,
and I remember getting to the last DVD of The Sopranos that was available. It was not unlike Game of Thrones when they were going to take another 5 years off or something to make the new shows. So now there was this downtime, and I had basically like – I had like an Italian-American or in this case Italian-Italian crime family drama hole in my heart. And so I was like, well, let me watch The Godfather. They're always talking about it on The Sopranos. And then I watch it, and I was like, this is what all the hype is about?
Oh, that context really – yeah, that really helps. If anything, maybe Goodfellas could kind of scratch your itch because it's more poppy and fast-moving. And The Godfather, just again, I understand why it's revered. And I do like it, and I would watch it again. And I will watch it again, so I'm not saying I dislike it. But I do tend to lean towards the more fast-paced movies. That is a long, like, three-hour, very contemplative – take on the scene, the way, or it's an approach in the movie. And so you compare that to Goodfellas or Casino. By the way, this will discredit me if you want to discredit me. I mean, I think for a long time I thought Casino was better than Goodfellas. I think I rewatched Casino recently though, and I realized that I was wrong and everybody else was right. I just really like the color. Have you seen Casino?
Yeah. In fact, remember I told you how for a while I was making little short films, and my big joke was to have the credits be like,
oh yeah,
way longer than the film. I literally took the credits from Casino and then just transcribed them and then made them the credits to my movie but changed the names. Because the credits of Casino are like 7 or 8 minutes long, just the credits. So, no, I liked Casino, but I haven't watched it since my early 20s, so I don't know if it holds up or not.
Yeah, I think plot, storyline, I think the Goodfellas plot and storyline stands the test of time way better than Casino. But I remember when Casino was, I guess, relatively new, and I was still watching it on VHS, I guess, in college. I felt like it had the feel of Goodfellas, but it had the, I just love the color scenes. Like taking it, it's not in New York, and now it's in this weird sunny place, and it's like this dark underworld juxtaposed.
Sharon Stone. Great in it.
And the suits, and now I really sound like my dad, but like the suits that De Niro would wear in there, these like purple suit with an accent tie or whatever, just like, visually, I love that stuff, and I think that I let that kind of woo me a bit.
Well, what about Goodfellas 2, where Ray Liotta learns how to stop smoking with Chantix?
Is that the movie where, I think people should wear whatever they want, but is that the commercial where he is wearing really, really heavy eyeliner? There is some maybe it's his tequila commercials. He almost looks like a goth. It's really weird, and nobody seems to be commenting on the fact that he just is really into eye makeup now.
Have you seen it's Chantix. This is going to be, even by our standards, okay, even by the standards of a show that it actively tries to alienate the listeners, this is going to be a bridge too far.
Okay.
Can I do this? Paul F. Tompkins recorded his own voiceover for the Ray Liotta Chantix commercial, which he obviously just sitting on his couch, just like ad-libbing over what is happening to Ray Liotta's character. Now, the reason this is aggressively anti-listeners because you can't see the commercial. Nobody will even get what he's referencing, but I'm still going to play it for you. Will you allow it, sir?
I will. Sure.
The setup is Paul F. Tompkins writes on Twitter, "I've seen this commercial many times, but I've never really listened to it until now, and it's pretty wild." And it starts with Ray Liotta with a lot of eyeliner on, looking at the camera, and then it's like a graphic of his signature. It says Ray Liotta, actor, father, ex-smoker, and that's where we pick things up.
And I quit smoking with Chantix.
I'm known for being a tough guy, but cigarettes was tougher than me because one time a cigarette pushed me down the stairs and blamed it on an owl. Another time I got carjacked by a corncob pipe. One time they had a new pope and the smoke flew out of the chimney and attacked my grandma. I don't know about smoking anymore because...
Now, Ray Liotta is sitting backstage on a shoot, and there somebody's handing him like a manila envelope for some reason. This is all the kind of B-roll under the Chantix talking that now Paul F. Tompkins has re-recorded.
Took the non-smoking pill. It came in an envelope shaped like paper, and I looked at it and said, I'm done smoking high. I read more about not smoking, and it turned out I wasn't doing it no more. I got right in my car, sat there for a while. Then I went on a picnic with a lady. We walked down a fence. A dog tried to attack me. He was made of smoke, but I petted him, and he's my friend now. So thanks, anti-smoking. I put anti-smoking pills on my salad. I'm a happy guy, thanks to Chantix. Chantix, you did.
When he says I put anti-smoking stuff on my salad, Ray Liotta is like drizzling salt on his like wife's salad in like a garden or something. Again, I apologize. I know that was terrible radio. Just go look at it on Paul F. Tompkins' Twitter feed. It's genius. And yeah, his eyeliner is it's an interesting look based on everything we think we've known about Ray Liotta previous to this.
Right. Exactly. Hey man, I know that we have to wrap up. Can I play? I just have one voicemail that I got today that I really want to share with you. Can we do that?
Yeah.
It won't take long.
Do we need the sound effect or are we just going to go?
I mean, do I have a version of you doing it? I think I do. If that's the case, can I,
play this?
Oh, what is the sound that is coming from my computer? Smooth.
There's a Chantix commercial starring
Ray
Liotta.
Once again with the music for a weekend.
Oh, that's the wrong one. Anyway.
I thought it was kind of good.
It was still pretty good.
Thank you, Chantix.
I got this voicemail from listener Rachel. You and I were talking last week about some of the rude behaviors people are engaging in with FaceTime. Specifically, I think you and I were saying, don't go into a public place like a restaurant or a coffee shop or an airplane and just like open up your FaceTime and have a loud conversation without using headphones and annoying everybody around you. And I got this voicemail from Rachel.
Hi, guys. Listener Rachel here. I was listening to you guys talk about FaceTime, and I feel differently than you guys because I have seen the worst of humanity in FaceTime. So people talking to their kids doesn't bother me anymore. I was once working as an employment specialist, so I was working with people to get jobs. And this one guy came in who was, you know, in his 20s, and during our one-on-one meeting, he pulled out his face, he got a phone call from FaceTime and started talking to his girlfriend. So I just stopped talking and sat back and observed, I guess. And then she accuses him of cheating and she wants to see who he's with. And he looks at me and he says, can I show her it's you? And I say, okay. And he shows the phone, flips the phone to see me and I awkwardly wave, and then the boy turns the phone back and says, see, babe, she's old. I guess that's my bar of FaceTime inappropriate behavior. Love the show. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Right?
That's amazing. That is an incredible story. I love that story. It's a beautiful story. I mean, not so much for his listener, Rachel. Was that her name?
Yeah.
Not so much for listener Rachel, who that sounds like that was hard to go through, but what an amazing story. Did I get the first part right, that she was interviewing this person for some kind of job placement type of thing? And my first thought was, I hope that she doesn't give this person a job. And then I was like, no, I hope you find the worst job you can think of and send this guy to that job.
You now have to shovel poop on Mars. Oh, by the way, Mars is not a hot planet. Mars is a cool planet. Quick correction. Somebody corrected us online. I think we're...
Oh, did I say it was a hot planet?
Well, I think we both... I think I was complicit in that.
I think I might have messed up.
Anyway. So that is an amazing story. And yeah, I guess I understand. Like, now talking to your kids on an airplane on FaceTime does not quite seem so bad once you see the horribleness of humanity. I think that she was acting as a job placement person, but not like she wasn't interviewing him like, hey, you want to come work for my company? That's how I heard it the first
time.
Right.
No, she was
like,
probably interviewing him
that.
So that she could then place him somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, that's the question is, do you not place that person anywhere? Do you just lose their file? or do you place them somewhere truly awful?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's because obviously you got to figure out whatever is going to punish this guy the most, and what punishes him the most: no job or terrible job.
Yeah, or you hire a PI, you find out if he really has been cheating, and you narc on him to his girlfriend.
Or a fourth possible outcome, and one that takes real commitment: when he turns the phone to you, you lean across the desk and start making out with him.
And obliterate his relationship. Need a job placement officer.
Yeah, but you took him down in flames.
No,
that would be the most hilarious burn you could put on that guy. You'd be like, he turns the camera like, look, this is who it is. And you can be like, babes, why are you putting the camera on me?
Who is this other woman? You told me you were available. You told me you were going to break up with her.
Is that Becky with the good hair?
So do you want to do music out, and then we got to come back with some No
yeah,
Point
let's
Conversion,
Can we go
right?
with some Mac Miller?
Yeah, I figured you'd have a thought on that.
Yeah, I do. I have a few thoughts. I think we actually played, I would say one of the most upbeat songs off this latest album, Swimming, is What's the Use? That's the one that I sent you. It sounds very like an Anderson .Paak song. In fact, Anderson .Paak really maybe helped produce it. There's another song called Ladders that's pretty upbeat. I mean, I have to say this album kind of runs the sort of spectrum between upbeat numbers and ones that are a little bit more kind of, I don't know, contemplative. And I like all of them for different reasons, but I don't know. I'm sad about him dying, and I don't feel like playing an overly contemplative song by him. So maybe could you just play Ladders?
Yep.
Off of, and this probably has an explicit next to the song, so there's probably something bad in here, but just fairly warned be the listeners. And then so what that means is we'll wrap things up. We'll play a little Mac Miller, and then we will come back with the TBTL No Point Conversion. If you want to hear sports talk, if you like underinformed people who were probably too drunk during the game trying to foggily remember what happened, this is the sports show for you. If you don't like that kind of thing, then you can go ahead and just get off the bus at this stop, and we will see you right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio. If we're saying goodbye to you, thanks for listening. We will see you tomorrow. Until then, go Mariners, go eat a bagel, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Somehow we gotta find a way. No matter how many miles it takes, I don't feel so good right now, but it all come falling down when the night meets the light, turn the day. Can't stop, then you won't stop. I know just how that feel. When you're on top, till the ball drop, you never seem to be so real. It feels so good right now, but it all come falling down. When the night meets the light, turn the day. Feel it a little, feel it a lot. I'm swimming a bit, but deeper in thought. Keeping my head on top of my shoulders. Into some shit, I'm out of the box. This the level I'm on, needing it all right now and forever is gone. Baby, the weather is strong, whether it's hot or cold, we're coming knocking on your door. Well, I'ma maintain how I'm staying so high. Took the ladder all the way up till we touching the sky. And you know you're dead wrong, you in love with a lie. All I wanna do is free your mind. We don't see no lines, we don't color inside. It's a very small world, we don't fuck with the size. Yeah, see the bigger picture when it's beneficial. Loving how it fits, you blow the whistle when you run out of time. Yeah. Waking up, I open up my eyes. Do you mind if I blow your mind? A little closer, baby, don't be shy. Why you worried that it's gonna be fine? I guess that kind of day is really all I'm trying to say. We don't have a lot of time to waste. Somehow we gotta find a way.
You know you rock when you roll with the Seahawks. Marshawn Lynch, beast mode with his dreadlocks. Wilson passes the ball to the end zone. Touchdown. You know we're going to get the crown in Super Bowl 24. Team, we get the ring, the bling.
Oh, my God. From one high-quality rap song to another. Welcome
that
to the inaugural.
Blown out. What is going on with your system over there?
I don't know what to tell you.
I wonder if it's a dirty knob or something. You got dirty knobs.
Well, I don't think so because it's the same. It's the same knob that was playing. Oh, wait, you were playing Mac Miller.
Yeah.
Maybe Cade and Lil Hoogie just got their hands on like a fierce 808?
I don't know. That's not what's... Anyway, but I just want to make sure that you were hearing that, too, because it's not coming down the line hot. That thing is just like...
That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
That's anyway.
The same file I've always... First of all, let's definitely focus on the important stuff at the top. That's the same file that I've always played the song, so I don't really know.
Without a reason, bashing on the Hawks is technically treason.
Yeah, I don't know. Bashing on my sound file is technically treason, Andrew.
So yeah, I know. True.
Welcome to the inaugural edition of the TBTL No Point Conversion, your place for Seattle Seahawks, Cleveland Browns, and other sports-related conversations from two guys that have only a vague memory of what happened during any of these games. Let's start with the Seahawks. They lost to Denver 24-27. I went into this game with... I would say my expectations were sort of I tried to manage my expectations. And this is the first – let me put it this way. This is the first season in a long time for the Seahawks where I did not just assume that every game, unless it was playing the Patriots, was an automatic win. Mm-hmm. Like I'm an optimist with the team, and I tend to just figure like, yeah, they're just going to – I always think they're going to win. I just always do for some reason. And so, you know, 2 years ago, we're playing Denver – We're playing the Case Keenum-led Denver Broncos. This is not even going to be close. I always think that the Seahawks are going to win. This year I was like, let's just play them tough and see what happens. Maybe we'll get lucky at the end. Maybe we won't. I did not expect to win this game. We did not win this game. I saw the headline in the Seattle Times that said the Seahawks look lost. I don't know. I thought that was unduly harsh. I actually felt like kind of encouraged by this game. I felt like, yeah, there were some blown assignments, but it's the first game of the season, and Earl Thomas hasn't even been with the team up until a few days ago. Like, yeah, there's, you know, there. Denver also, by the way, I forget the exact record, but Denver, I don't know how they've opened 7 seasons in a row at home or something, but they're like 6-1 or something opening at home of late. Like, they seem to always get to open at home, and they seem to always win. It's a loud stadium. There's the whole altitude thing. So, I felt sort of positive about this game, even though we didn't win it, and I can elaborate on that. But first, Andrew, what was your take on this game?
Yeah, I don't feel terrible about it either, but I'm pretty disappointed. Maybe just knowing that, like, I mean, Janikowski, our new old kicker, who is just
Seabass?
Blast to watch. I mean, just rumbles out onto the field like some sort of World War I era tank in his cutoff shorts. And
it's
his
fun to see someone
jersey.
Who clearly snuck into the stadium and is impersonating a
right,
player,
right?
And somehow hasn't been stopped. I mean, it's really watching Sebastian Janikowski is just going like, okay, any of us could do this.
Yeah, I think I was during the preseason. Game against the Vikings, I think me and the Stewbot were texting about him, and the Stewbot said, I think and hope that he smokes during halftime. And I'm like, he probably does.
He definitely drives a truck delivering beer during the offseason and smokes during the halftime. Like, that's definitely happening.
And he definitely puts his feet on the end table without shoes on even when company is over. Anyway, I like him as an addition to this team, as an interesting character who I think can do good for us. And I don't want to just lean on this too much, but he missed 2 field goals in a row. He missed a field goal. And then, you know, there was a penalty. I can't remember exactly what it was. So he gets a second
offside
chance at it closer and misses again. I mean, that right there ties up the game. I feel like I'm a broken record. I say, you know, when I refer to games as being winnable. And in this one, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's good. Your team's stuck in it. Like, I don't want to be watching a game where your team gets blown out, so therefore it's not winnable the whole time. But it was a bummer. I remember it was like clearly going to be the last drive of the game. There was just enough time left, and it seemed like, boy, and Veeves and I were both watching it together, and we said, you know, a year ago, or certainly 2 years ago, this is where we would know we have this game locked in. Even though we're not in the lead right now, the ball is in Russell's hands, and we have one more drive. Game over. Sorry, Denver. And unfortunately, those days are gone. Let me ask you this, and then I'll hand it back over to you. My other kind of big takeaway was, I had been hearing people on the radio saying, you know, Russell Wilson is maturing as a quarterback, and the big thing we're training him to do now is to stay in the pocket, that he can't scramble on every single play, which I understand. Like, seeing him scramble sometimes is incredibly invigorating when he makes it happen, but it really isn't good when your quarterback has to scramble all the time and he's an injury risk and all those things. This time, he definitely stayed in the pocket. He looks more comfortable in the pocket than I think I've ever seen him. But on the occasions that he did need to scramble, that the line broke and he needed to scramble, I didn't. Maybe it was the fog of the booze, but I didn't see any of the old fleet-footed Russell back there. Did you?
Well, a couple things on that. One, Denver's defensive line is probably outside of the Los Angeles Rams, it's maybe the toughest defensive line in football. Von Miller is a superhuman, and so I feel like this was a bad game to analyze a lot of the. I was not encouraged about our line. They gave up 6 sacks. That's not good. When the whole emphasis off season was trying to protect Russell Wilson, truthfully, I think that they. I don't think Russell Wilson is a good pocket passer. He's not tall enough to see over the offensive linemen, and what happens when he scrambles is it's longer that the secondary has to cover and the cornerbacks have to cover our receivers. And the longer you have to cover receivers, the more chance there is for them to break free and get something. And I think just having Russell just sit in the pocket is, I think that's not the best use of him. And a couple of our plays where I think that they just need to roll him out way more, like a design, not a design sneak necessarily, and not a broken play where everything is breaking down around him and he's trying to run away, because that really blew up in his face. I was a little disappointed with Russell too, because Russell needs to know where Von Miller is coming from. Like, if he looks out to his right and Jermaine false start Ifedi is like a man to man, as it were, on Von Miller. In other words, if Jermaine Ifedi is supposed to be stopping Von Miller by himself and you're Russell Wilson and that's happening to your right, when you feel pressure from your left, you have to know, I can't just dipsy-do and turn around and go to my right because I'm just going to get a face full of Von Miller. Like, that happened, I think, at least 2 times where Russell did that kind of awkward, like he's running directly backwards away from pressure on the left side, and then he sort of turns to the right. Now, I know a lot of this is just like desperation, but he has to make a plan in his mind that no matter what happens, he's not trying to escape to the right, because that means he's escaping into Von Miller's clutches. So I really think they would have been better served to get Russell Wilson rolling out on a bootleg with the intention of throwing. I can't think of one other than like some regular, like pretty standard passes, which like Disley turned a fairly standard pass into a really long completion in the first half. That wasn't and I guess Russell made a really nice toss to a wide open Tyler Lockett, which was really cool to see. But I just didn't feel like his pocket passing was anything particularly great yesterday. And I'd rather see them put him in motion. I think it puts the defense off balance too. Like, okay, these guys are over pursuing. They're rushing really fast. They're super aggressive. How about if you like mess with that by doing some of these kind of run pass options, or those plays where like he rolls out and he can either hand it to the guy or keep it? How about some screen passes over the top? You let the defensive line rush you and then you toss it over the top of them. I don't know. I just felt like our calls were not very imaginative yesterday, which kind of bummed me out.
This is the first time we got to see, we have a new offensive coordinator, right? What's his name? Schottenheimer. His dad was the Browns head coach, right? Or maybe was
right.
his dad or whatever.
Brian Schottenheimer's the kid, and Marty Schottenheimer was the dad.
Yes, right. So
is the dad.
This is the first we've sort of seen his offense, which, again, I don't know much about this. I don't know much about calling up plays and stuff like that, but I do wonder, like, I just felt like there was, and I'm not saying that it was right for them to do that, but I felt like it seemed that people saw all the scrambling Russell was doing, and as fans, when it was successful, it was fun, but they clearly wanted that not to be the case anymore. And I feel like what they've done now, though, is it's like you have a tool that does something really special. This is a terrible analogy. I wish I could think of something sharper. But like, you have a tool and it does one function really, really, really well, and that's why it's cool. But you say if you use it too much, that's not good. It wears down or whatever. But then you're saying now we're never going to use that function on the tool anymore. Well, then what is the point of having that function? And if Russell Wilson, right. if one of his key things is his legs and moving around, I'm agreeing with you here, I think. Right. You know, like you say, design some plays for it, or at least, you know, I feel like they're overemphasizing the thing that, like, if he has to move his legs, then we failed. I sort of felt, I don't know. That's sort of how I felt a little bit.
If you want someone to stand in the pocket, get one of the 7,000 McCoy brothers out there. Like, get a 6'4", 6'5", prototypical quarterback who just stands in the pocket, can see above everything, and just sling the ball downfield. The guy who's like, how can I forget his name? Anyway, the guy that was the Chicago Bears quarterback, and then he went to Miami for a hot second, and now he's out of the game. But, you know, Jake, what's his name? Anyway, go get some big, tall, prototypical pocket-passing quarterback if that's the goal. But the other problem with this – to me, the other problem with this strategy of having Wilson stay in the pocket the whole time is he doesn't have great targets. Granted, Will Dissly got free for a couple plays. Great. I mean, it was kind of fun to look at Disley's numbers versus Jimmy Graham's numbers because we certainly – we got a better performance out of Dissly than the Packers got out of Jimmy Graham last night.
Yeah.
So I'm not – I mean, I'm loving Will Dissly so
me
far.
Me too. I didn't even know his name until the game.
I like the catch by Tyler Lockett. I like Brandon Marshall, although I think Brandon Marshall is going to get flagged for a lot of push-offs. Everybody knows he does it, like, and then he does it. Like, I think it was ticky-tacky, the call in the end zone. By the way, that's another thing. I don't want to get derailed here, but let me just say, I know that when people who aren't Seahawks fans hear me say this, it just sounds like a broken record. Every call that could have gone against us went against us. Every unlucky break, like, I don't think that touchdown that was called a touchdown for them was a touchdown. I think the guy's foot was clearly out of bounds, and then I think his second foot was never on the ground when he was about to catch the ball. I think that foot comes off before he catches it. So not only is one foot out of bounds, but the other foot literally never comes down in bounds. And that's why the official on the scene called it a non-catch. So I think there was a Pete Carroll tried to challenge what was an obvious fumble, and they didn't give him the challenge, which is a little bit on Pete Carroll. It's like, yo, bruh, get two flags. And if you can't find one, call timeout.
He looked old trying to fish it out of his pocket. Can I ask you a question about that fumble, though? Because, again, I was a little into my cups here. I was a little confused why it would have been because they would have if it was ruled a fumble, they still recovered it, right? Would it have just been better field position for us?
Do you know for a fact? I was freshly off of the ferry disaster of 2018.
Oh,
so
right.
I didn't see the play. Did they recover it? Did the other team recover it?
It looked that way to me. It was not called a fumble, so we don't have a definitive answer on that. But I was
actually taking notes
in the first half of the game, and I remember writing, like, wow. I don't understand why you would even challenge that because they recovered it, but maybe it would have just been better field position for us.
My guess is that the Seahawks actually recovered it because otherwise there would be no point in challenging it. My guess is that the Seahawks that's the only explanation for why, because if there's what you think is a fumble but the other team recovers it, it's completely pointless. Like, there'd be no reason for him to challenge it, because I guess it says here
I'm looking at something off of Field Goals. Meanwhile, the refs who didn't grant Pete Carroll his challenge on a Royce Freeman fumble and a possible Seahawks recovery on the Denver first.
So there you
go. I guess I only saw it once. It didn't look like a Seahawks recovery to me. I don't know that that's necessarily definitive, but I guess it was a possibility.
Sure. So back to Russell. I don't think that Russell has – we don't have an elite receiving core. We have a Doug Baldwin who's now out with an MCL injury for however long, which, I mean, honestly, like, God bless him. But, like, I don't think Doug Baldwin was coming into this season looking like he was going to be – well, first of all, he was injured the whole preseason. I think Doug Baldwin is hitting that point that inevitably happens to most players in kind of what we would call skill positions and speed positions where their body just won't let them do it as effectively. And if you lose a step – I mean, Doug Baldwin's never – known as the fastest receiver. He was known as a real tactician, real good route runner. I mean, I didn't expect a ton out of Doug Baldwin this year. And it's like, well, who else have we picked up? Well, we have Dissly, which, again, that went well. But, like, we let Darbo go. I mean, Paul Richardson, we let go. David Moore, I guess. I just don't know enough about our receivers. What I don't feel like is we have some, like, And we have Brandon Marshall, who's like, I mean, Brandon Marshall has been in the league a long, long, long time. If he has one more productive season in him, that will be great. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him run out of gas soon because he's old by NFL standards. So it's like, okay, we got Russell Wilson. We're trying to convert him into a pocket passer. And we don't have anyone really great for him to throw to. Lockett's fine. I think Lockett's lost a step. I mean, that catch that Lockett made, he was wide open. It was a nice double move. But it's like I think that injury to Lockett two seasons ago, or was it one season ago? Whenever it was that he had that really gruesome leg injury, I just don't think he's ever been the same since then. I just think
it's a bummer.
Yeah, it really sucks. Because he's a great guy and he was a phenom when he sort of started with us. So, and I think he's serviceable, but I just don't know. Like, I don't understand the plan. I know I started off by saying I was actually pleasantly surprised by the game, and now I'm sounding super negative. I just don't really understand. I don't really understand the plan. Like, okay, we're going to try to just have Wilson stay in the pocket and throw to who? Like, they didn't make any interesting pickups in the offseason. Like, honestly, the best thing we have going for us is our punter, which is not a good – like, it's good to have a good punter, but it's like you want that to be low on the list of things that you're excited about. You want to have, like – I mean, Chris Carson looked good when he jumped over the dude, so that was positive.
Yeah.
Although I didn't feel like we were able to establish a run game, and I kind of think, well, that's part and parcel with Denver having a fearsome defensive line. Although, you know, a line that can pass rush versus a line that can run block, those are sort of two different things. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure what their strategy is in terms of not. To me, I think we got worse at the receiver position, and yet we're trying to keep Russell in the pocket throwing to God knows who instead of getting him out in space and moving, and I just think that's a mistake. Again, these are smart people who know everything about football and they spend all day long thinking about it. So obviously they know something I don't. But from my position on my couch, I can't quite figure out what their strategy is.
And yes, but they're also very close to it as well. And it's like the analogy when you live in an apartment and you have a problem with it, and then you move to a new apartment, you're somewhat influenced too much by the one factor. You know, like, so if you live in an apartment without a washing machine and a dryer, you think the next time I move, all I want is a washing machine and dryer. And then you prioritize that, and then you just miss some pretty obvious deficits in your new apartment because you were just focusing on that thing. And to go back to my one point that I'm just beating a drum with here is I feel like that's a little bit what they're doing with the new offense. Like, they're kind of saying, we don't want to be this, like, scrambly, like, make it up as you go along. Like, we need to be, like, you know, Russell Wilson is more mature now, but you're right. I don't think it's unclear how to make that successful based on what we saw yesterday. I was very excited about Disley, though. That was exciting. I didn't know who that dude was.
No, that's great. That he had been getting really high marks in camp. People were excited about him, but that's really cool if they can utilize him. Because, I mean, part of the argument was he's just there really to pass block or just to block because our line can't do shit. And by the way, this is the – I mean, I don't know what I expect them to do. I don't mean to be critical of every single thing, but, like, supposedly DJ Fluker was, like, going to make our line better, and he's hurt. I don't know what his status is, but we had J.R. Sweezy in there stinking it up, getting a Chris Carson – like a long Chris Carson run called back on a hold that didn't even matter, didn't even need to happen. Sweezy's in for Fluker. I mean, my problem with the offensive line is everybody's always friggin' hurt. Like, and I don't know what – I mean, I can't be mad at them for not picking up good players and then also mad at them for picking up good players who then get hurt. Like, you can't – they can't account for that. But it's a bummer to have Fluker as this, like, supposedly going to really make our line good, and then he's not even playing in the first game, and then stupid-ass Sweezy's in, and then he's just doing his normal thing of sucking. It's like, doesn't feel like we're making progress.
Do we know for sure that Janikowski can't play left tackle?
No, we don't. And I think it's really worth exploring. I mean, I had a million other things, most of which are boring to the listeners. But I overall, look, we played a team that has a really good defense and that now has a competent quarterback in Case Keenum. Case Keenum, I think, has proved himself at Minnesota and some other places. Didn't he play for the Browns for a hot minute?
Yeah.
I think Keenum has proved himself to be a quarterback who, if you surround him with decent tools and you give him a little bit of time, like as in some protection, he's an effective, you know, passer. And I think he did that. He did that yesterday. And so they've got a decent quarterback. It's a home opener again, altitude. And, like, they got a lot of stuff going for them. And we didn't go in and, like, score 3 points. We scored 24 points. Like, and I think we can only improve from here. Like, so as far as not winning, I felt pretty good about it.
He didn't play for the Browns. Huh. He's like one. He just seems he's like the one quarterback of that level who didn't play for the Browns. I thought he did. I'm with you on that. Listen, I know we're not going to win every single game this year. It would have just felt, I'm just speaking obviously now, but it just would have felt really good to at least take the first one. But it was a challenge. Let me go into my little handy dandy schedule. I know is next week Monday night game. Oh, the Bears. Oh, but on the road again at the Bears. What are the Bears like?
Yeah, the Bears are like a team that is going to be so furiously angry by the time we get to Chicago on Monday night that they're going to be formidable. Because did you see what happened in the game last night between the Bears and the Packers?
I wasn't really following it, although you mentioned Jimmy Graham did not have the best night.
Well, they didn't target him much. He just didn't do anything. But the short version of what happened last night's game was Aaron Rodgers gets hurt in the first half. They have to cart him off. And then the Bears proceed – this is in Green Bay. The Bears proceed to score 17 unanswered points. Khalil Mack, who the Bears just picked up from the Raiders. Oh, man. Khalil Mack has a first half that's literally unprecedented in the history of NFL football, if I understand it right. I don't have the stats in front of me, but my memory is he was the first player in NFL history to have to score a touchdown, have a sack – have an interception and have a forced fumble in the in a half of football.
Worth the money, you think?
I mean, for 3 minutes. But then guess what happens? Second half starts. Who comes rumbling out of the tunnel? Old Aaron Rodgers on one friggin' wheel, like he can't even move his left leg. And like, why they played him, I don't even know. Because before he could get on the field, the Bears went down, drove the field, and scored a field goal. So now it's 20-0. And if I'm the Packers, I'm like, look, we are not. If Aaron Rodgers can stand upright, we are resting him this game, for the rest of this game, just in the hopes that we get him back in a couple of weeks. There's no reason to throw him out there like cannon fodder, but they don't. They send him out there, and as you might imagine, he engineers a comeback and they win 24-23.
Wow. And Khalil Insane. Mack, did he collapse or it just nothing really?
Well, he didn't do anything else the rest of the game. Yeah. He had no more sacks. He didn't tackle Aaron Rodgers, that's for sure. And he didn't – oh, by the way, you know who the backup was who led Green Bay to exactly no points in the first half? DeShone Kizer.
Oh, really? Oh, my God. I didn't know that. Really? Yeah. Oh, that's a bummer. Well, I don't know. Yeah, no, it's a bummer.
Well, like, Kizer seemed pretty excited when Aaron Rodgers was leading him back. Kizer didn't seem bummed. He seemed stoked, so I think he'll be
okay.
Yeah,
no, but I'm sure that's good. I mean, I just always liked him, and I wanted him to be successful on the Browns. But on the other hand, if he ended up being really, like, just – if he had just balled out, was just, like, amazing, maybe I would have been bummed as well. Although I don't think there's any universe in which anybody's making the argument that he's better than Tyrod Taylor. So, anyway.
Not right now. Not after – and more on that in a moment. All I was going to say is – we go on the road. Also, how is this our schedule? Like, how do we open? How do we open the season two road games in what are really difficult stadiums to play in? Denver because Denver, and Chicago because, well, it's Chicago. I mean, at least Chicago's not at altitude, but it's like they're pumped. They got Trubisky. Trubisky, they're psyched about that. He looks like a pretty decent quarterback, actually. Like, they're going to be hella pissed about losing that game to Green Bay. It's like, we didn't even make the playoffs last year. Aren't you supposed to get some help when you don't make the playoffs? Aren't they supposed to try to, like, soften up your schedule so that you can, like, actually kind of be competitive? Like, this feels like a shit deal to us that we got to start our first two games on the road.
Do you think it's conspiracy?
No, I just don't understand the rules. I mean, I don't really believe in conspiracies as it relates to this stuff, but I don't understand. I don't know who, like, it just doesn't feel super fair to me. It goes, well, at Broncos, at Bears, then we get to be home against the Cowboys, then we got to go on the road again to the Cardinals. So it's like, you know, it's like three of our first four games are on the road. And the thing that sucks about that is, like, if you get, in fact, and then we get to host the Rams, then we got to go to the Raiders. So 1, 2, 3, 4 of our first six games are on the road. Now, I guess that will help us towards the end of the season potentially. Yeah. But if we've already gotten our ass kicked to the point where we're behind the eight ball, if we're like 1 in 5 after those games because we're playing on the road a bunch of tough teams. I don't know. I feel like
actually putting it like that, I'm more encouraged because I feel like the Seahawks take a little while to warm up, both in games and in seasons. I mean, yeah, this is a little bit of a maybe just kind of luck talk or whatever, but it definitely seems like they were definitely a second half team in games. And also, I do feel like they take a little while to warm up, and especially it's such a young team, like you said.
Excuse me. Still with me?
Yeah, sorry. Muted my mic. Like you said, well, you didn't maybe say it exactly like this, but it's unclear exactly what they're doing out there. And I was talking a little bit about like the you have a lot of young players and a new coaching staff. So it's actually kind of now that I think about it this way, like we had a really good showing against a tough team in a tough place. We didn't win this one, but I could see them continue to make adjustments and grow together as a unit, just as an organism, and learn some things along the line along the way. And then we might have a really badass second half of the season and have the schedule be in our favor. That could be good. And if it doesn't go our way, we'd be eligible for Hard Knocks next year. So that's another.
Oh, God. I guess that would be a good outcome. If that happened, I hope it happens. Again, I know that I'm being like so kind of I'm playing both sides of this because I don't think losing 27-24 at Denver is like a massive humiliation. And we didn't look completely like feckless. Like we scored points. Like, you know, if you score 24 points and your defense plays okay, you're going to, you know, that's not nothing. I mean, we've had games where we scored 11 points. There's games where we scored 3 points, games where we scored, I don't know how many times we've been shut out recently, but it's like 24 points on the road is not nothing. So that is encouraging to me, particularly against Denver's defense, which has been their strong suit for the last 6-7 years. So I'm encouraged by that, but I'm also kind of, I don't know, I'm a little discouraged because I just still don't understand what the identity of this team is supposed to be. Like, I feel like it's not that I think like if they would have held on to Richard Sherman, we'd be so great, or even Jimmy Graham. Like, I don't know what I want from them, but I just feel like we let so many people go, and I don't feel like we replaced those people with superior players. Now, one thing that should be mentioned, I heard Dave Wyman talking about this on the pregame show yesterday. Like, I don't know how many people we drafted. We drafted 9, and I want to say we kept 7 of the 9, or maybe we kept all 9, considering injured reserve and the scout team. But that's a lot like kind of like the first season, I guess, when we brought in Russell Wilson. Like, mm-hmm. We got a bunch of young players, and apparently we liked the young players. Like, we didn't cut them. And so, you know, if John Schneider and Pete Carroll still have whatever their touch is, maybe what we're looking at are the next wave of the Legion of Boom and the next wave of K.J. Wright and Bobby Wagner. And we just don't know them yet.
That'd
you know,
be
maybe
amazing.
It's Trey Flowers and Shaquem
Griffin.
And whoever else is kind of out there playing for the first time. So I don't know. I'm cautiously pessimistic.
Maybe we'll name the show
Let's
that.
Let's talk Browns. And this is where I just turn the mic over to you and I go get some more cheese from a party platter that we have in the fridge. And then you just go, you run with it.
Well, I'm not. I'm actually not sure what happened yesterday. I didn't watch the game. Who won?
Okay. Well, I followed a little bit on the app, so I can try to fill in the blanks.
Any idea who won? That's all I want to know. That's like the big. That's the big question in Cleveland sports radio today. Is are we yay undefeated or shit still winless? Because it did, of course, end up in a tie. It went the Cleveland home opener. Cleveland has not won an opening. Opening day game in 13 years, often, if not always, playing somebody from their division. I don't know if that's a league-wide rule, but it's usually the Steelers or the Ravens, occasionally the Cincinnati Bengals. And so this time it was the hated Steelers coming back to Cleveland to play in a torrential downpour. And, you know, this brand new Cleveland Browns team that everybody has been hyping after coming off a winless season, facing Ben Roethlisberger, who has won more games in Cleveland Browns Stadium than any Cleveland Brown quarterback in like since 1999. And we were just really pumped to see our young, exciting team hopefully explode and stop the Steelers. Well, we did stop the Steelers from winning. It's really hard for me to untangle my emotions about this game. I feel very different about the tie today than I think I did yesterday. Yesterday, when we ended up tying the game in overtime, when our final, what should have been the game-winning field goal was blocked. It was a 43-yard field goal attempt.
Our kicker is a 43-year-old.
Right.
For the Seahawks.
Right. 43-yard field goal attempt in really shitty conditions. I want to remind people that, like, if you're listening to this on the radio or if you're watching the game and you don't see the rain, it was easy for me, and I was at the Browns bar watching it. It was easy from far away when you're watching some kind of, like, less than impressive plays go down. It's easy to forget, like, oh shit, they're playing in a fucking downpour like the entire game. So he
as evidenced
miss.
By the fact that the Steelers had missed an equally makeable field goal.
Yes, and
right
I will say
before
they
that.
Missed theirs, and that is a big difference too. Like, I felt like garbage because we had, like, clock management actually was Hugh Jackson did a decent job with it this time in overtime, got the clock down to 9 seconds. All we got to do is hit this 43-yard field goal, and that's it. The Browns, you know, just end a 13-year legacy of loserdom at home on opening day, and it's blocked. But you know what? He didn't miss it, and that the more I sorted out my feelings throughout the day and this morning, I'm kind of like, that's a blessing, I think, because, as Jarvis Landry would say, bless him. Because, you know, the Steelers could have won the drive earlier, but they just plain old missed their field goal. And that would be much worse. So I'm feeling much more optimistic about this, that, yay, we are now undefeated, not shit, we still are winless. And I think that in the same way we're talking about the Seahawks being a young team with a lot of growing to do, there's a lot of really good, exciting things, especially on the defense. I mean, our defense is so fucking badass, man. If we could just get our offense just to click a little bit. And I don't want – everybody in Cleveland is probably already ready to put in Baker Mayfield because that's what Cleveland does. But, like, I think that we keep Tyrod Taylor in there. Maybe we get to – you know, I think the receiving core needs to get open a little bit more. I think that was a huge problem. And who knows? Next week, maybe we bring home a win. Who is next week? Oh, it's the Saints. How are the Saints really bit it this week, didn't they? So,
well, there was like a 48-40 game or something. They played Jacksonville.
Okay.
They lost, but it was like a crazy shootout, if I remember right.
Okay.
Let me I didn't watch all of the game, although I did watch some of it on my phone as we were driving back once we got off the ferry. The Cleveland Steelers game. But let me just say, from the far outside of it, I think this is a game you should be really stoked about, because, I mean, Cleveland was down 21-7 at one point,
yeah,
and in the fourth quarter, and, like, if the Cleveland Browns of old would have just been like, well, here we go again, but this is not the Cleveland. These are not the Cleveland Browns of old. These are not the Browns you're looking for, like,
or these are the Browns we're looking for.
Maybe so, like. The fact that they actually, like, they, I mean, I it was sort of crazy, the stuff that happened. There was, like, an interception, right, that got returned for a touchdown. There was a couple of, like, pretty wild plays that happened to get Cleveland back into the game. But it was like, you know, it's the Steelers. It's Ben Roethlisberger, who, by the way, the computer once again drafted for me. Thanks. Do I have please draft rapists in the, like, metadata of my fantasy football team? Second year in a row, I get Ben Roethlisberger, who I do not want, who I will not play on principle. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I started Philip Rivers, and he smashed, as he always does. Nobody gets more points in fantasy football and has fewer wins than Philip Rivers and the Los Angeles Chargers.
Oh, that's right. Anyway. There's a joke about him in this week's newsletter, as a matter of fact. And his lossless, yeah, even our sports talk is seeping into the newsletter. By the way, I still think you're beating me, though. You're going to win fantasy football this week.
You can't win. I have more points than you, and you don't have any players tonight, and I still have a player.
There you go. See, you've been, you know what Genevieve said? I got to say, this is very astute on her part. I didn't know she followed our fantasy football relationships that well. But she said, oh, you got him in, you're playing Luke in the first week. That's a bummer. By week three, he forgets he has a team. I'm like,
yeah. No, I might.
Woe
I'll
to
tell
the
you
person
what.
Who gets you in week one.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, though. Now that I'm going to win this week,
yeah,
I might. You never know. Actually, and I'm kind of excited because I have Saquon Barkley, who I love even though he destroyed my Huskies last year in whatever bowl game that was, he is a talent. And so I have Phillip Rivers, Devontae Adams, who had a really good game for the Packers. He was part of that Green Bay comeback. T.Y. Hilton, who, by the way, in breaking news, T.Y. Hilton is still in the league. T.Y. Hilton must be 1,000 at this point, but still getting minutes. And I have Golden Tate going tonight.
Oh, fun.
So, yeah, unfortunately, it does appear that I will probably beat you this week. I apologize.
Oh, that is okay. That's how it goes.
But, yeah, if I keep winning, I'm going to keep paying attention.
That's good. That's
if I start losing, then I'll stop paying attention. All I was going to say about Cleveland was I think that even though it was frustrating that the Browns did not manage to convert, it took some pretty first of all, there were some real shit calls that helped the Steelers continue their drive, particularly that roughing call that was obviously not roughing.
Yeah.
So like things
that was
went
happening all
the
over
Browns.
The league. I will say though, that was just that's just
sure right. Yeah. I know you don't want to sound like you're just being a Browns apologist, but I'm just saying the Browns had some bad luck happen, some classically Clevelandy kind of things. And they didn't roll over and die. They did not just go okay, I guess we lose again. They just kept battling, and they tied the game. And, yeah, they didn't hit – they got the field goal blocked. But, even if he'd missed it in those terrible conditions, that you didn't lose. And you played Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh's a good team per always. And you – I just think that there was a spunk and a kind of durability to Cleveland that has not existed in a long time. And also the defense is monstrous, which is great. And if the offense figures a few – I mean, Josh Gordon is still good apparently.
Yeah.
I think Tyrod Taylor – I love Tyrod Taylor, honestly. I think he's a cool guy.
Me too.
I think he's definitely a capable quarterback. I do not think they should rush Baker Mayfield in. Mm-hmm. I mean, he scored 21 – I don't think he didn't throw all three touchdowns, right? Maybe he threw two of them?
Yeah, you had mentioned a pick six before. I'm looking back. I don't think it was a pick six. I think somebody intercepted, and then he threw the touchdown pass to Josh Gordon to tie it up, I think. But again, I'm a little bit fuzzy on the details, on the memories.
Yeah, so there was – I just think Tyrod Taylor – I mean, I think he looks very much serviceable right now. And you put Baker Mayfield in there too early and you risk breaking his brain. I like Baker Mayfield too, by the way. I mean, he looks he actually looks like the real deal.
I'm excited about both of them. Yeah.
So you know, I again, this is really your part of this segment because you're the hardcore Browns fan. But if I were in your shoes, I would feel encouraged by the fact that they didn't just roll over and die when they were down 21-7.
Yeah, I just at the moment when I thought oh my God, we are going to win this game. There's 9 seconds left. They're in good field goal range. We got this. And even as a Browns fan, never to get your hopes up. But I was just I just was so ecstatic. And then for it to end as a tie, it felt in the moment it felt like a loss. It really, really hurt. And that's because of all the baggage that Browns fans, coming off of a winless season to say well, you're still basically winless. It hurt. Can I tell you the gross part of this story?
Yeah.
It's not terribly gross, but it is bodily. So I was at the Browns bar here in town, and at first I was there by myself. It was packed. The plan is to eventually just make the back room the Browns bar, but the back room holds 20 people, and there this place had probably over 100. It was at capacity.
Wow.
People are standing. I mean, the whole bar is just filled up with Browns fans. It's pretty great. And anyway, I'm getting into it. Oh, so then Genevieve does show up, and she's there for a big chunk of the game. And then Kevin and Anita showed up, which I didn't know that was – Kevin had made some noise about maybe showing up, but I thought he was just being nice. So it was actually kind of fun. We had a little crew there, and we're watching the game with just tons of Browns fans. I like that. And I wasn't, sweating profusely necessarily, but I did get home – and I noticed, I was taking off my outer shirt, my button-down shirt, and I noticed my T-shirt. I was it'd probably be nicer just to put on a fresh shirt. Even doing this show sometimes, I get a little bit damp just from performing or whatever. And so I take off my shirt, and I don't even know why I'm telling you this. I was just kind of fascinated by my own body and how it reacted to that Browns game because I took off my shirt, and the sweat that I sweated out during that game was like battery acid. It was some, like, people talk about stress sweat smelling worse than regular sweat. I don't know what I did to my body during that game, but my body was rejecting it. And what I found in my t-shirt when I threw it into the washing machine, I couldn't believe it smelled so bad. I couldn't believe it hadn't burned out the armpits of the shirt. I was like, that must be what they're talking about when you're stress sweating. And I blame the Browns and the Steelers for that. Yeah. Sorry, that was gross, but I wanted to like give you a sense of where I was emotionally when I came home.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Like, I'm just trying to think of like what your body was doing kind of on a molecular and chemical level.
I don't know.
Like what it was trying to process. Let's see. At the Saints next week for the Browns, that will be a tough game. Although, you know, I mean, I'll tell you this. I don't know much about the Saints defense. Other than Greg Williams used to be their defensive coordinator.
Oh, right.
Before you were blessed with his services. But I was going to say, like, normally you see the Saints on the schedule and you're like, ah, crap. Their offense is so tough because of Drew Brees to contain. But I don't know, you know. Browns are pretty good this year on defense. And, you know, you get, like, Myles Garrett gets to him a couple times. You might have something there. Like, you might be able to, and I don't know what their defense looks like, so you might be able to score on them. Like, maybe their defense isn't that great. I don't know how Cleveland's run stopping is. I know Albert Kamara is he's pretty insane. Don't they also have Leonard Fournette? Isn't he hurt or something?
I don't know the status of those people.
I think it'll be a good game.
Yeah, Le'Veon Bell didn't play for the Steelers yesterday, which probably worked in our favor. I think the guy who was in for him, was it Connor? I can't remember the name of the
rookie.
Guy. And he, I got to say, he did break off some pretty impressive runs, but I think for the most part we were able to contain them. So
I also think it's harder if it's raining and it's muddy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not Leonard Fournier. It's Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram Jr. Those are the kind of 1-2 punch running backs of the Saints who are actually pretty good. Okay, so next week, let's do this. Let's make a prediction. Or I will. You don't have to, I guess. Seahawks at Bears Monday night. I don't think we're going to win. I hope that I'm wrong. I just feel like in Chicago, under the lights, the Bears are going to be really stinging from the Green Bay game. They have Khalil Mack, which is like, great, Von Miller to Khalil Mack.
Right.
We have nobody. Our offensive line is piss poor. Efetti is a joke. Like, Efetti led the league in false starts last year, and he was the most penalized player in the NFL last year, and I believe he had 2, if not 3, false starts this game and holds. Like, he's just getting right back after it. Von Miller apparently said in the pre-game press conference or whatever you call it, where he meets with the broadcasters, he said there's no way they can put 65 on me solo, and that's Jermaine Efetti. And like, and then he just destroyed him, and it's like I can't even be mad at Von Miller over that.
No,
he's just right.
He's like, also just kind of a likable guy.
He really is. He's like, that guy can't handle me. And then they put that guy on him, and that guy can't handle him.
Right.
It's like, I mean, why? What is the, like, this new offensive line coach that we have? How does he think Jermaine Efetti is going to stop Von Miller? Like, what in the history of these two players makes you think that's going to work?
But apparently they didn't have any options. What do you think? Well, that's a bigger question.
Well, I don't know enough about offensive line, but here's what it is. Wherever Von Miller lines up, whoever the two closest people to him, be it a tight end and a lineman or just two linemen, the rule of thumb is wherever Von Miller is, whoever the two closest players to him are for the Seahawks, you're now in charge of both of you blocking him.
Right.
You know, that's how that strategy works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
Von Miller strolls
like,
up to the line and you're like, now he's my problem. I got to try to help with this.
I was going to ask, why do you, and I kind of stopped myself because it's probably too big of a question. Maybe we can ponder it and come back to it some other time. But like, why is there such a dearth of good left tackles in the league right now? And do you think that has something to do with the college system? I guess maybe just end there. Does it have something to do with the college system? Is it like we're just not the way a left tackle has to perform in college isn't the same way as the NFL, so they're people aren't just prepared for. But it seems like we go through cycles where certain positions are just really in need or really like in demand. And in this case, it seems to be left tackle for a lot of teams. I mean, the Browns are one of those teams, too.
I don't know enough about offensive lines in college football and or the position of left tackle. But what I would say generally the issue is offensive linemen are unnatural humans. They should not exist because they have to be like 6'5" now or bigger. They have to be over 300 pounds and they have to be super fast and nimble. And those humans, there just aren't that many of them on planet Earth. And the ones that are on planet Earth hurt themselves all the time because their bodies shouldn't exist. Their bodies are out of proportion for what they're trying to do. So I just think generally speaking, if you have two all pro linemen on your team, you are like you're the Dallas Cowboys in the 1990s, or you're like, I don't know, other teams that historically tend to have a really good offensive line. Minnesota had a really good offensive line some years ago. Maybe they still do, actually. So I guess my point is, like, the problem is there are like 20 good offensive linemen in the whole league. You know, there just aren't enough to go around because it's just such a hard position to staff. And so I think that's it. And I think the only thing you can do when you get somebody like Khalil Mack or a Von Miller, all you can do is try to chip him, which is to say, like, have a tight end always near him, blocking him and trying to kind of just redirect him. Like, you've got to double team Von Miller the whole game. It's just how it is. And then you got to hope that your other guys can basically handle their people one-on-one is what I think it comes down to. And obviously we didn't do a good job of that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm happy to leave it there if you want. I guess.
What do you think the Browns are going to do next week?
Oh, yeah. I am just going to predict wins for both teams because we need it. I need it. My T-shirts need it. I think they're both going to be really exciting games that are going to be down to probably the final drive, and the Browns and the Seahawks are going to win.
Okay. I hope you're right. I hope, like our friend Durs, who suddenly found some weird pocket of optimism he's never had before yesterday, which literally turned the tide of the game, although we accused somebody of stealing his phone, and then he said, "This is the robber. I'm a big Browns fan."
Wait, did he say that? Did he end up coming back and saying that?
Yeah, his response was, I said, "Bad news, everybody. Someone stole Durs's phone." And then he said, "This is the robber.
Right. Oh,
I'm a big
right.
Browns
yeah,
fan." And then I think DFTB said, "The robber can stay because he's good luck," or something.
Right,
somebody
right.
said that.
I remember
I'm
that
hoping
part,
that
yeah.
this. I'm hoping this positivity that you're demonstrating, I hope you're right. I mean, this is the thing. With the Seahawks, again, I can always construct a universe in which they roll. Like, things are clicking, like, you know, Chris Carson's, like, they open up some holes for Chris Carson, and then they tweak Russell Wilson's, the play calling for Russell, so they get him out of the pocket a little bit, and Disley continues to be a mismatch problem, like, and then our defense, you know, comes together. Oh, I think Earl Thomas is going to be hurting this week. Like, I don't think, no matter how much you work out at your house, I don't think you can come in and play as many meaningful minutes as he played
right.
of an NFL game,
Good
right
game,
out of
though.
The chute, and not be, although he's superhuman. I asked John Moffitt, who, like, the most athletic Seahawk was, John Moffitt, who played for the Seahawks, and he said, "Oh, Earl Thomas is the greatest athlete he's ever observed at any level of football." You know, and this is a guy who played college football, obviously, played pro football. He said Earl Thomas was just, he said this to me like 5 years ago, but, like, Earl Thomas is a superhuman out there. So hopefully, although he did, by the way, screw the pooch. He and Bradley McDougald, although I definitely forgave Bradley McDougald because he went on to have two interceptions. But that play that went for a touchdown from Emmanuel Sanders was, first Earl Thomas bites on, he basically covers the wrong guy. Then McDougald takes this terrible line on Sanders and ends up not getting the tackle. Like, we did have some pretty lousy plays, but my hope is that those lousy plays were the result of everybody not playing together very much, and that we'll get better and better. So what I'm going to say is my official prediction for the Seahawks next week is they will probably lose unless they win by a ton or win by a small amount.
Yeah.
They're either going to lose by a lot or lose by a little bit or win by a lot or win by a little bit. One of those four outcomes will happen.
You're – man, I just love that I get to study under you. Let's see. You know what? Big week for big weekend for sports. So I wasn't following the storm, but I know like everybody I follow on Twitter was, and after a really impressive finals, or I guess semifinals, the Storm is continuing to make headlines by rolling through the finals here. Congratulations to them. Still a little bit more work to go there. Your Huskies won. Cougs still undefeated. And apparently there's still a team playing baseball in Seattle. As a matter of fact, I believe we have a special night we should remind people.
Yeah, we do. September 26th. Yep. Mariners.com/TBTL. Come for the James Paxton appearance. Stay for the T-shirt that doesn't promote TBTL. That's how we're billing that night. That's a free T-shirt if you buy your ticket in our special section. We made sure to get the most affordable section that we could, so we don't want anyone to break the bank on this. But a ticket gets you a T-shirt and a ticket to hang out with us and a bunch of other tens of listeners. It's September 26th. It's against the Oakland A's. It's a Wednesday night. And we would love to see you there, mariners.com/TBTL. One other little footnote here, piece of housekeeping before we're all done, is on Friday we're going to announce the winning song of the summer song. So tune in for that. I'll be in Seattle. We'll have DFTB there, and we'll make the big announcement. So if you're wondering when that's going to happen, it's on this Friday. Anything else that you want to say, my friend?
No, you know, it's always awkward trying to get out of this. We had a catchphrase we were supposed to say at the end of the segment. I have no recollection at all of what it is supposed to be. I feel like we should play some music here, but I don't know what to play. I don't know. I'm all over the place.
What if I just play a sound effect and then you play a song? Dude, okay. But what song would you play?
That's what I'm going to try to figure out here. Should it just be something? Oh, God, that's all REM. Sorry, I'm just looking at things I recently heard. I don't know what I'm looking at.
You're on such an REM streak.
No, the thing is, it's like I haven't been listening to a lot of music now, and I actually kind of, when I got to the point in that REM podcast, I'm looking while I'm talking, by the way. When I got to that point in the podcast where they were talking about REM albums I never listened to before, I was like, well, I guess I'll have to pause the podcast for a while and catch up and learn these albums. And then I was like, I didn't feel like learning new REM songs, you know? Like, I enjoyed it up until the point that I know REM's discography, and then I kind of gave up on it all. And now I just haven't been listening to a lot of music. I've been listening to a lot of Brown's podcasts, and I just have these, as you would say, ghost frigates of REM songs in my history. How about Where Do the Children Play by Cat Stevens?
Oh, my God,
too
no.
Too sad.
So it's like so downbeat. Can
okay,
we get some
about,
jock jams?
Okay,
Can
how
we
about
jam some jocks?
These are my Browns. Roof, roof, roof. How about
yeah,
that?
Sure. Down.
Actually, what was that? I don't even remember what that's called anymore. I don't have it in front of me. Well, this is, maybe we should just go out without music because this is going to take too long.
No, just pick a song that's not Cat Stevens. It's like, that's the only.
That's the only thing I have is Cat Stevens.
The only bad thing you could do is pick a Cat Stevens song.
I'm going through my thing here, and I'm just like, oh yeah, no, it's all okay. Jazz. We don't want jazz. Okay, here, Steady As She Goes by the Raconteurs. That's upbeat.
Okay, ready? I'm gonna play a drop.
Okay.
I'm gonna play a drop, and then as soon, the drop is 4 seconds long.
Okay.
And it's how we're gonna always end the sport, the no point this year. Okay.
Okay.
And then you just fire it. You fire your song right when the drop is done, if you can. Okay.
Okay.
I mean, I figured he had to be in sport, but he wasn't in sport.
Wait, no, I messed it up. I want to try it again. Go again, Luke. Because I accidentally hit it twice. I got nervous. This could be really good if I do it right.
Okay, here we go.
I mean, I figured he had to be in sport, but he wasn't in sport.
We'll be right back.
power out.